mic is on.
Good morning. Good morning. 9:06. Can we all hear us? Okay. 9:06 on February 20th, 2013. I will call the Dallas City Council briefing meeting to order. We will begin with an invocation, and then Jerry will lead us in the pledge after that. And to in honor of Black History Month, let me introduce to you a man that I have met through getting to be mayor, a man of great integrity, and he's given so much to the city of Dallas, Pastor Claude Maples. Retired from Roman Avenue Christian Church, and he's an individual that's given me some counsel, and I appreciate it very much, and thank you for being here and giving an invocation this morning.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, for having me. Before we begin, I want to share a little brief thing with you.
I came into this room before it was dedicated. I was a reporter at that time with Jim Murray and Channel 13's newsroom. And when we asked, what is this room going to be, this is, says, it's more like a briefing room where the council can come together with the people and talk to each other. And one of the guys standing behind says, you mean people in Dallas will actually talk to each other? Well, I noticed when I came in the room today, a lot of people spoke to me, but you didn't speak to each other. So speak to the person closest to you around it.
Hello, Tanae.
God is much more pleased with that than us giving him a shopping list of stuff we want. But when we treat each other right, justice is done. Anybody who's married will know that no matter how bad the situation gets, you can't fix it till you talk to each other. And so when we come into this briefing room, we come here to talk to each other to fix things. And nothing is impossible for those who love the Lord. Let us stand. O Eternal Spirit that loves us so much that you continue to allow us to make mistakes, you pick us up, you dust us off, and you give us another opportunity, and we blew it again. But you're still right there picking us up time and time again. And for that we say thank you. And so we ask now that the aspirations of our minds and hearts will become synchronized with your divine will, that what we do and how we do it will bring glory and honor to your name and this great city that we love. And we give you all the glory and the pleasure of being the ruler and establisher and the author and finisher. Amen.
Amen.
Mr. Allen?
Pastor, thank you for those inspiring words. Now let us pledge allegiance to the greatest country in the world.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Well, continuing
with our recognition of Black History Month, Mr. Carraway would like to introduce an individual and a sponsor of something very cool.
Thank you, Mayor, and let me thank you once again for the acknowledgement of Black History Month. We of course, thrive on education, and with that being said, there's a law firm, Gaudier & Wynn Law Firm. They sponsor an MLK Oratory Competitors competition, and this is the 21st time for them sponsoring this contest. I'd like to bring one of the managing partners up, and he's going to introduce some folks that are going to be very, very exciting that happens to live in my district. Let me just get that on record first. Mr. Steve Good, Attorney Steve Good. You can take it from there, Steve.
Caraway, thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, City Council, very pleased to be here today. We're going to introduce you to one of the rising stars of the Dallas ISD. We do sponsor the MLK Oratory Competition. This year is our 21st competition. We have our winner here today. He's a fourth grade student from the John Neely Bryan Elementary School, Janello King. He's very excited, has a lot of things to tell you. I'm not going to tell you all of his things, but he's, in addition to a speaker, he's very involved in dance groups, arts club. He's trying to decide what he wants to do, whether to be an architect, a lawyer, a judge, or an engineer. So he's very talented young man, and I'm going to turn it over to him because he really is the star of the show, Janello King.
If I, Janello King, could speak directly to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. about my hopes and dreams for our world, the first thing I would say is thank you. Thank you for being a courageous voice to speak up for civil rights. Thank you for using your feet to walk instead of ride on the buses of inequality. Thank you for using your bottom to sit in against discrimination. Thank you for using your legs to march ahead and be our drum major for justice. And thank you for using your faith to remain peaceful through the protest. You see, as far back as I can remember, my parents have taught me and my seven siblings that we are born into this world with certain tools, that we are already equipped to do certain things. I pondered the topic for this year in that phrase. If I could speak directly to Dr. King was a little disturbing. In my short 9 years, I have been raised to believe that even though a person's human body has left this earth, their spirit is still with us, reminding us to use the tools they have passed down along with the ones we have acquired from our family, school, church, and community. My mother refers to this as having our own tool belts wrapped tightly around our waist. So, Dr. King, I want you to know that I know that my dreams for our world have to begin with my dreams for myself. I aspire to become an architectural engineer because I like to use my head and my hands to do math, to draw, to build, and to create. Feeling inspired by your speeches, what I'm saying is, I dream of becoming an engineer of mankind, an architect of great scholars, a contractor of community service. My goal is to be great at all of it. I am reminded of one of your famous quotes. Not everybody can be famous, but everybody can be great, because greatness is determined by service. Dr. King, I desire to be a servant of the people. I want to be the driving force that says, wake up, get up, and let's use our tool belts to work together to build a better world. Let's use our hammers and pound out this bullying business. Grade school children picking on each other. Teenagers misusing technology with cyberbullying. Big companies bullying small businesses. I want to be the person to teach others how important it is to use our tape measures to measure a person by their character and what they can contribute to this world. Not be measured by the clothes we wear, the cars we drive, and the neighborhood we live in. Dr. King, we must take out our souls and cut through those resources equally, that everyone can live decently. I won't stand for it. I will lift my voice and urge people to take out their screwdrivers, to tighten up our government so they can finally realize we're all more alike than we are different. Tighten up our morals and our values, and tighten up ourselves. Now we take more responsibility for what happens in our own lives. I will always take out my drill and drive into the minds of all people something you have already told us. Together, we must learn to live as brothers and sisters, or together, we will be forced to perish as fools. My dream for our world is to engineer a new way to live, that every generation and every nation can demolish this world of mirrors. It causes us to look up, see only the reflection of our wants and our desires. I dream that we can build up a world of windows, so when we look out, we can look through and see the needs and concerns of others. So I say to you, my brothers and sisters, take out your tools, clean them up, shine them up, and create new ones. My generation is going to need them. And we all know, tools work better and last longer when they are taken care of and used correctly. And now, Dr. King, as much as I have enjoyed this conversation with you, I must bid a fond farewell. Because I, sir, have work to do. Thank you.
All contact and agent information, Mayor, goes to.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Chinello, I just want you to know that you don't get unanimity from this body like that from anybody. So you did a great job. And Steve Good, thank you for Gaudier supporting this year after year. It's a wonderful gift that you give us, and we're very excited about the future of our children.
His dad is here. Come on, David.
Wow.
Come on, Dave.
Mr. Mayor, I vote for lawyer and preacher.
Mr. Mayor, I just wondered what district he lives in, because I could see a future city council member or mayor. Watch out.
Yeah. And district running
district
3
four.
Yeah.
District 4.
And Glen Oaks. Yeah, Glen Oaks.
He's been groomed.
Appreciate it so much. Congratulations.
Thank you so very much, okay?
All right. Our next recognition will be with Councilman Linda Coop.
Mayor, let's have all Virginia Cook and all of her realtors come up here. We're going to take some pictures and stuff, but we want everybody to enjoy this honor that we're going to give today, including my Park Board Representative Lee Kleinman and Ann's Park Board Representative Larry Jones. So if they could just come right on up, and Sophia's going to organize you. Mayor, by the way, I love this. This is great. Tight. We're switching. Oh, okay. And she wants Sheila to stand right by her. Okay. So do another row.
I need to.
Okay, tall people in the back. Sophia, bring them out this way so we can fit all of them, okay? Virginia, if you can make your way over here. Right, here we go. Sit on. Come right over here, Virginia. Stand right between us, okay?
Yeah, that's great.
You okay?
Yeah,
okay. Here we go. Oh, right. And we'll bring him right over here. You can stand right there, too. And Warren Palm, the president of Friends of North Haven Trail, if he'll come over here by me, too. Okay, everybody.
Order.
Okay, let's have order in
hey,
order here, okay? Thank you, Council, for allowing us to have just a little bit of time. If Larry Jones would come over here as well. First of all, for those of you that don't know her, this is Virginia Cook, head of Virginia Cook Realtors. You probably, yeah. Just some short introductions here. My purple representative, Lee Kleinman, Larry Jones, which I, Larry, if you'd come over here too, and Park Ward representative, and Mr. Parham, who is the, president of the Friends of the North Haven Trail, are all here today to honor Virginia, and all of her, realtors. Her terrific realtors have come here to support her as well because of a very, very generous donation that she has given to the North Haven Trail, which is $150,000. So Ann and I are going to do the honors here and do the whereases and stuff because this is what happens, Virginia, when you're super terrific.
The more terrific, the more whereases.
No. There you go.
Whereas Virginia Cook is the chief executive officer for Virginia Cook Realtors, and whereas in 1971 through 1999, Virginia Cook served as president of Henry S. Miller Realtors for 30 years, and whereas Virginia Cook Realtors became one of the largest residential real estate firms in the nation with 29 offices statewide, and whereas Virginia Cook provides exceptional services to clients, the community, and to the real estate industry, and whereas in 1982, Virginia Cook received the Woman of the Year Award from the Women's Council of Realtors Dallas Chapter, and whereas Virginia Cook has served the community by participating in different organizations such as Dallas Women's Forum, President Dallas Chamber of Commerce, Member Children's Cancer Fund President, and
whereas Virginia Cook has been involved in the community by taking an interest in the Friends of the North Haven Trail, and whereas Virginia Cook and Sheila Rice toured the beautiful North Haven Trail rest area that's located at St. Michael's and Lavendale and has amenities such as a water fountain and a bicycle repair station, a recycling, and that's cool, a recycling receptacle and a beautiful, beautiful stone seating area. And whereas this area, this beautiful area, will be named after Virginia Cook Realtors for their monetary contribution of $150,000 to help the North Haven Trail with additional amenities. Now, therefore, I, Linda Coop, on behalf of the Mayor and the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend a very special recognition to Virginia Cook for her outstanding service to the real estate industry and to the community of Dallas for helping improve our city.
Thank you very much. You know, when you have that many whereases, everybody knows you're older than God. Mr. Mayor and Councilman, I am so happy to receive this honor on behalf of the city. At the end of the day, we're in the real estate business, and we really do put families in the right home. And often I am asked, how many houses did you sell this month, or how many did you sell in 2012? My answer for 40 years has always been the same, none. What we do is we sell communities and the amenities that are attached to those communities. The greatest asset that the city has allowed us to participate in is the North Haven Trail. Secondly, when Lee Kleinman gets after you, you better write the check. And I can tell you, I intended to write the check for a third of the money, but then it seemed like the right thing to do at the right time. Our hearts are in the right place in our communities that we serve and give services to buyers and sellers. And equally important, now our feet will be trotting down the North Haven Trail over and over again. I'm really, really, really sincerely proud of my team. I'd like to think they get up this early every day. I just don't know. But at the end of the day, I'm humbled by their energy and their talent, their contribution in many ways to our city, and most of all, for the services that they give to those that they have the privilege of serving. Thank you very, very much for this honor. It will be shared with our entire company, and I know the real estate community will really enjoy hopping around the trail. Thanks.
We're going to take some pictures now. Sheila Rice, Sheila, do you want to say a couple words before we introduce you?
I think all I say is we are really excited. We love our city. We think our trail system, and I guess we didn't mention Lois, who came up with the idea, but we are thrilled to be a part of it.
And I should mention Lois Finkelman, who was the council member for District 11 before I was a council member, who came up with this terrific idea I was her park board member for many years, and so it just is actually it's a great ladies thing that we've got going here. We're going to let the guys get into the club here, okay. Mayor, you want to say anything?
No.
Okay. Well, we are ready to take some pictures, okay. Unless you have any other comments.
I think Mr. Cadane wanted to say
okay.
Mr.
Yeah,
Cadane.
Please. Yeah. I just wanted to thank you. And I guess I can say Virginia. Is that okay? Because I know it is Virginia. Honey, you are a force to be reckoned with in this city. And I'll tell you, you've done it all in grand fashion. And I'll tell you, and you said it, it's the folks that you've got behind you that make you great. And you get great people with you, and you're going to do that. But I'll tell you, you are one of the biggest assets this city has. And I have... Yeah, she really is. And I, you know what you said when people call you and ask you how many houses you've sold? When I call, it's to find out how our economy's going. Because when you're doing good, we're all doing good. So thank you, darling, for what you brought to Dallas and what you mean to Dallas. We love you. Thank you.
I just want to really echo very quick Councilman Cadane's remarks, but to each and every one of y'all too, because you're the leader, and what y'all do and what y'all contribute, we know, sitting around this council, we know what y'all do for the communities itself. The nickels and dimes are so precious, and then y'all get out there and start throwing dollars and $100 bills and stuff to make our city a better place to live, and it's what each and every one of y'all do. We recognize it. We know it. We appreciate it so much. So thank you.
Sweet. Thank you. Okay.
We'll take a picture.
Put the tall guys in the back. Say, put the tall guys in the back. Put the tall guys in the back. Thank you.
All right, thank you all. And
thank you all.
Now the mayor will recognize Judge Hill, who's got an important announcement as well for some cool people.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The cool people are coming in. Cool people shift one just left. Cool people shift two are coming in. Yeah. Yeah. Photo contest. Mr. Mayor, they are coming in. If you'd like, I can sing Kumbaya while we're waiting.
No,
we're
fine.
No, no, no. Okay. It's a unanimous no.
Trash
attack.
I will say that RIT is got some good press this week. Did you see
that?
Yes. I thought that was cool.
For those who don't know, RIT is Rochester Institute of Technology. A young man who lives in District 5 by the name of Peter Albert Charles Hill happens to go to RIT. He's a sophomore, made the dean's list.
I'm not surprised.
All right, I think we got folks here.
Do we have all of the cool people shift to in the room? Okay. Mr. Mayor told me that all of them were in.
Oh. It looked like they were. Sorry.
You are an amateur, right?
Amateur.
But then you have to name it.
Thank you. The Trinity River Corridor Project is a project large enough, enormous enough, marvelous enough to encompass a plethora of activities and programs. One of those is the Trinity River Photo Contest. The photo contest is to allow those with the photographic eye to be a part of one of the biggest nature preserves in the world and a part of the largest public works project in the United States at this time. The Trinity River Photo Contest has been going on for a few years now. The contest occurred this year between June and October. Over 500 photos were received. The judging took place in November of 2012. There are three divisions and four categories. The three divisions are amateur, pro, and youth. The four categories are architects / structures, forest / prairie, river / ponds, and wildlife. This marvelous contest is sponsored by people who care a great deal about the Trinity and about our city and our region. Those sponsors are the Trinity Commons Foundation, Beaudry Gallery and Frame, Dallas Camera Club, Downtown Dallas, Jeanette Kennedy Gallery, Encore, Southside Public Improvement District, URS Corporation, and Xerox. The names that accompany those Encore is Charles Elk and Andreas Sanders. Charles Elk and Andreas, y'all come up here right quick, walk fast, because the mail gets upset with me if y'all don't walk fast, so walk fast. Charles Elk sees me around lots of places, and he reminds me that I always ask him, are you the new Debbie Dennis? And he always says yes. Thank you so kindly, Encore. Trinity Commons Foundation is represented here by our good friend Council Member Craig Holcomb. Craig served on the council for 8 years and has continued to serve. He is head of the Friends of Fair Park, but works very hard with the Trinity Commons Foundation. Craig, thank you for what you did before, and thank you for what you continue to do. URS Corporation is represented by James Fry. James Fry is coming now. Thank you, URS Corporation. Are there other representatives of other sponsors whose names I've called? Helping me.
Dallas Camera
Club. Where are they? Dallas Camera Club? But aren't you one of the people who's going to get an award? You stand in line. Stand in line. We got. Right. Take that for Dallas Camera Club. But we're gonna call your name in just a minute. All right. Ron Kirk taught me call the people's name. Thank you, sponsors. Can y'all give the sponsors a hand, please? I believe that the photos, thank you, sponsors, will be shown on the screen as we go. I want to announce the grand prize winner first. I'm going to announce all of the people who won, but I'm going to announce the grand prize winner first. His picture is on the screen, Mr. David Worthington. Will you come up here, please? David Worthington won first place in Rivers and Ponds and is the grand prize winner. Can you think of anything more spectacular than the picture that is on the screen? David, it is said that all the money in the world cannot buy the photograph that we wish we had taken. We're awfully glad that you didn't just wish, you took the photograph. Thank you. The other winners are the fine folk who are standing here. I am going to call the name of every winner, and as your name is called, please come forward, and your certificate will be handed to you by Assistant City Manager Jill Jordan. Some of the folk are not here. I'm going to call their names anyway because I want their names in the record. In the amateur category, Samuel Bogle took honorable mention for Forest. Susan Berksiger, first placed Forest. Eric Cardenink, is that you, Miss Susan? All right. Is she the one from Lake Highlands? No, okay. I told you I was going to call your name. Aris Cardeninas, River, first place. John Chamberlain, honorable mention, architect, wildlife. William Christie, architect, second place. Kurt Grisbach, architect, honorable mention. Gina Hargrove Costlow. Wildlife, second place. River and Wildlife, honorable mention. Ron Henderson, Forest, third place. Forest and Wildlife, second place. I'm sorry, honorable mention. Simon Luna, Wildlife, first place. Roland Miguel, Forest, second place. Honorable mention, architecture, forest and wildlife. David Memlicht, architecture, first place. Honorable mention, forest. James Reeder, river, first place. Ben Sandifer, wildlife, third place. Architecture and forest, honorable mention. Russell Singleton, architecture, honorable mention. Ernie Tasek, architecture, third place. Chris Wells, river, third place. Please give a hand to the amateur category.
Wow.
In the pro category, the winners are Kevin Bain, river, third place. Sean Fitzgerald, forest, first place. River, second place. Forest Wildlife, honorable mention. Chris Jones, honorable mention. Architecture, Karen Mack, architecture, first place. Forest, third place. Frank Richards, forest, second place. Architecture, honorable mention. River, honorable mention. Wildlife, honorable mention. Harry Rumberger, architecture, second place. Rick Turner, architecture, third place. Please, and of course, we've already recognized David Worthington. Please give a hand clap of praise for those in the pro category. And now the ones that we all love the most, the youth category. This, the first one, Mr. Allen is going to say a whole bunch in a minute, but I get to call the name first. Lauren Baranski, forest, first place. Cole Hansen, architect, second place. Forest, second place. River, first place. Natalie Hansen, wildlife, third place. Y'all can clap for Natalie. Y'all clap for those other two. But I have some other youth. Emily Henderson, river, second place. Abby Law, forest, third place. Wildlife, first place. Mirabelle Martinez, river, third place. Gladys Moreno, honorable mention, architecture. Sienna Scalf, architecture, third place. Wildlife, honorable mention. Please give all of the youth a hand clap of praise. They said they would like all of them to come up, all of the photo winners to come up for a picture with the council. Please come up, hold your certificates kind of so folks can see it. And council members, please join us for this important time with our photo winners.
Thank you.
been snapping pictures of proud mamas, papas, grandmamas, and grandpapas, aunties, and uncles. Congratulations to you as well.
And why?
There's that too.
Congratulations. Great.
Sorry. Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you very much for your patience in this presentation so important to the Trinity. And I should also announce finally that each person received a check. Those checks have already been distributed. Thank you very much.
Yes. While our guests are either returning to their seats or exiting the room, Ms. Coop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor Pro Tem. Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Thank you. Jesse and Rosa are going to pass out what is a really cool thing. It's called a transit pass. Just so you won't forget, the dartboard nominations are coming up. It has the ones that have been nominated already.
So, Ms. Coop, the first time was an air boarding pass, and now we've got a transit pass.
Very right. Nice. Everybody has their own little district number on here. They are positionally numbered. So you cannot say that you didn't know that Friday, March the 13th, March the 1st, 2013, at 5 o'clock is the deadline to put in your appointment nominations, okay? And you already done yours, and those are acknowledged. The ones that are already down are acknowledged on the front of the transit pass. So I want to thank Reese Davis for coming up with this cute idea, and it's become kind of a fun thing for the council to see. Huh?
Now,
and you can use it today. They're worth $2.50. You can use it at DART.
Now, Ms. Coop, what date and time do I need to have these things in by, or they're going to be too late?
Yes, the deadline, Friday, March the 1st, 2013, by 5 p.m.
Thank
Mayor.
You.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted, just in case, since they have it already written, it says March 13th, like right here, and just remember that's my birthday.
Okay. All right. Excuse me, I'm sorry, what did you say? Thank you, and let's move to our voting agenda. I open microphone. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're going to begin your morning speakers with Cody Smith, Roy Lee, Michael Davis, Zach Trahan, and Sim Griffin. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. You will need to state your name and address for the record and address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Your first speaker is Cody Smith.
How's it going? Cody Smith, 3702 Frankfort Road. I'm here today to talk to you about an event that will be taking place in Dallas in August 24th. If you look on your table, you should have a packet and a card that kind of explains that. The event is called Beat Cancer. It's originated here in Dallas. It'll be the first one ever. Basically, it's a cancer event, but it's not a walk or run that you're used to. It's centered around music and the arts. It's going to be at the Music Hall at Fair Park, August 24th. The idea behind Beat Cancer is to fill all the seats, which is over 3,000, with those affected by cancer, those that have it, those that did have it. Friends, family, loved ones. We're going to shoot a music video to a song I wrote for my parents when they both had cancer. And the song basically says, you know, there is hope, you're not alone, you know, you can make it through this. We're also going to have all of those that attend sing a chant part of the song, which is just never give up, that kind of goes throughout the song. In the end, you'll have the video and the song, which you can put on iTunes. All the proceeds from buying that are going to go to our partner, which is Love, Hope, Strength Foundation. Those are the main events of the day, but it's also a whole day of drum corps. We're looking to maybe get some school drum corps to kind of rally the people, because it's playing out the words beat. So beating as an overcoming your adversary and beating as a musical beat, because music is very healing. We're also going to have live music and t-shirts. Mayor, you've got one there for you. The back of the t-shirt's going to have drumsticks. When you arrive, you'll write the name on the drumsticks of the person you're there for. So when you're in the back of this auditorium and you see all these names, that's who you'll be singing for. So ultimately, in the end, when there's that person who just found out they have cancer or someone that needs to hear it, we can share this video and the song to this person and be like, I was there that day. So were thousands of other people that know firsthand what you're going through, and you can hear my voice in the song, and we're speaking to you. You're not alone, and you're there. And we're going to have sponsor booths and just raise awareness for, you know, there is help out there. The whole thing's also being filmed for a documentary, kind of behind the scenes, the making of, and the power of music and healing. So if you have time, you know, the next few days, please take a look at your packet. We've got a website. We've already done some great things. Last week we did a hospital blitz. We started in Fort Worth, and then Friday we did Dallas. We tried to hit as many oncology and centers as we could to spread the word. So I'm asking for support and awareness, knowing that the music hall is owned by the city of Dallas. So you also have my contact information if you need more information. It's a lot to get in 3 minutes. There's so much involved with it, but I just wanted to raise your awareness that this is coming August 24th. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, and you should be very proud of
thank
this.
You.
Excuse me, Ms. Grayson.
Mr. Smith, I just want to say that I think this is a terrific idea and that it's a youthful and different approach to this. And perhaps all of us could put it on our district websites, put this information on and get it out that way so that people are aware of it.
Thank you very
much. So thank you. This is a terrific idea, and I hope you're really very successful with it.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Allen?
And I just also just want to say thanks for your compassion for doing this. Not everybody gets up, raise their hand, and quite frankly, just has the energy to put on what you're doing. And so, my hat's off to you.
Thank you
very
much.
I
appreciate
it. Mr. Alonzo?
I just want to ask if you could send it to us by email as well.
I sure can.
Okay, thank you.
Can I find all those online? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Carraway?
Yeah, thank you. And Cody, let me just say, this is the type of stuff that I look to hear about when the speakers come. Is how can you help?
Yes, sir.
And I invite more speakers to come and tell us how they can help, and then we can return the favor and be supportive of your efforts, okay? So I appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Ms. Medrano?
Thank you, Mayor. Cody, so inspiring and very touching. I hope that you inspire other young folks to, number one, participate and join you, and you know, all of us, I think that all of us can help you, and thank you, Ms. Grayson, for that suggestion. Because really, I always was taught that you know who your friends are when you're ill, and that you do need that support system by family, friends, and anyone that can come by your way to give you a supportive word. So thank you for doing this.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
And believe it or not, I tweet, so I will tweet this for you.
We have a Twitter, so.
Please.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Roy Lee. Roy Lee will be followed by Michael Davis, Zach Trahan, and Sim Griffin.
Good morning, members of the City Council. I've been having problems out of the Dallas Police Department since 2009, and it seemed to be an ongoing situation, and now it's just getting out of hand. Last year, around Valentine's Day, I like to got killed by the police department because I was heard my alarm go off outside of my car, and I went outside, and by the time I got outside, then I didn't see nobody, but the police was there, and he drawed a gun on me, and, you know, by that time, it was about 20 or 30 cars outside, and, you know, I felt like that I was being, you know, singled out by the Dallas Police Department. It's just, like I said, just an ongoing situation, and, you know, it's kind of getting disturbing. My daughter go to school downtown in City Council, and they go in her classroom and, you know, try to talk to the teacher, and they don't have time to talk to them. So, you know, I try to call the mayor's office, and I never got anywhere with them. So, you know, it's just I'm trying to find help to where I don't have to have this problem out of the Dallas Police Department. So, like I say, it's just been going on since 2009, and I've talked to Mr. Codner, Kathy Regan, and Gary Tilly, you know, about the situation, and like I said, it'll stop for a while, but it's kind of cranked back up again after a couple of weeks or so. So, you know, I'm trying to just figure out what I need to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Michael Davis. Michael Davis will be followed by Zach Trahan and Sim Griffin.
Good morning, Mayor Rawlings and City Council. I really feel like after watching a young man today from John Bryan, I should probably just give him this piece of paper and sit down. He'd probably do a better job, but I'll try. My name is Michael Davis. My business address is 2807 Allen Street, Dallas, Texas. Before I begin, I want to thank everyone on City Council for doing a great job and for working together in ways that have never been seen among this elected body in the city's history, and I really mean that. I appreciate your advice, your mentorship, and your openness. You all are to be commended. My subject today is African American business participation and inclusion with respect to the Farmers Market Redevelopment Plan and other city-supported business opportunities. In some TIP deals, like 500 South Irving, for example, it is spelled out in the briefing that there should be 25% minority and women business enterprise business participation. However, in the Farmers Market deal, which is being promoted as a great project for all of Dallas, I don't see the same level of detail involved. It's mentioned, but not to that same level of detail. In many cases, I see African American business community left out of these opportunities. And it's not the fault of elected officials or staff per se, but I believe a more conscious effort can be made by those that seek city funding to include African American business owners and operators at the table. Not because it's required by the city to get TIP funding, but because it's a fair and equitable way to do business. And our work is just as good as any other businesses out there. When it's time for various projects to be supported, African Americans are among the first to be courted for the brochures and for the TV cameras. However, when it comes time for those projects to have African American business participation, let me repeat that, Council, business participation, we're nowhere to be found. A city like Dallas cannot grow and prosper without business participation by all races. The reason that the disconnect occurs in the African American community is because after the hard work by city council and city staff is done, when you look at the projects going up, we aren't there. We are not visible in the work that's being done. We are not visible in the process, and that's an issue for me. A great moment in city history occurred in this room 2 weeks ago when we celebrated the efforts of Councilwoman Davis and her 175 SM Wright Redevelopment Project Group. She came up with an innovative program to involve African-American companies and workers in a meaningful, visible way. You cannot put a value on that type of opportunity. You can't put a value on youth and underserved committees, just like the young man that spoke this morning talked about. Being able to see themselves as business people instead of just fighters for jail, food stamp lines, etc. There's no reason that we can't collaborate in that same fashion for TIF projects downtown and elsewhere, not just southern Dallas or west Dallas, but downtown and north. We are business people with something to contribute far beyond consumption and faces for a brochure. We are a viable option for all projects, not just those in Southern Dallas. Again, I thank you so much for your time. I see it's ended, but I appreciate you all's time and attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Mr. Atkins.
Mr. Davis, thank you for speaking this morning about the farmers market. We are going to be brief about the farmers market at 1 o'clock this afternoon, and I hope you will be back at 1 o'clock. As African-American community and African-American business, I hope you talk to the Dallas Black Chamber, the Dallas Black Contract Association, get those people more involved. Sometimes they're not at the table. I am at the table every day for the last 6 years to make sure we do have African American minority involved with the business deal, especially with the hotel and a whole lot of more project and procurement. So we do hear you as a council, and we do sometimes there is a disconnect between staff and council members of what's going on different projects. I do understand where you're coming from. But I do invite you back at 1 o'clock, and please get back with me, and we can vent out your concern in the business community.
Thank you, Councilman.
Your next speaker is Zach Trey.
I'm sorry, Mr. Carraway.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you, Mayor. And ditto to what Deputy Mayor Atkins just said, and Mr. Davis, there are concerns, and I appreciate you stepping to the forefront. Sometime, and I say to the council, where we erase the race card and not playing a race card, we have to sometimes talk directly and use the African American, the Latino, and the Anglo. Sometime it's proper, and this is a proper time because, one, you have denoted and shown exactly what is true, and it is the duty of this council and our staff to figure out how we can move beyond these points. And so I am pro trying to figure out how African Americans can become more involved and folks to understand that there are different levels and different plights that one have to kind of go through. I agree with Deputy Mayor Atkins as it relates to the need for us to come together as African Americans to involve the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce and the black contractors and other organizations, the African American churches and all those folks, so it won't be just a one man standing on behalf of trying to get something through. So we're going to work along with you from that standpoint. I want you to be assured of that. I want to make sure that you are here and are back at 1 o'clock for the other hearings. And I would encourage the staff to make sure that we continue to be very diligent in meeting the goals that we have set. And we will follow through to make sure that those goals are met. So we'll see you back at 1. I just wanted to give you a public acknowledgement of your concern.
Thank you, Councilman.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Your next speaker is Zach Trahan. Zach Trahan will be followed by Sim Griffin.
Good morning, Mayor Rawlins and council members. My name is Zach Trahan. I live at 6017 La Vista Drive, 75206. First of all, this next week, the Transportation Environment Committee will be getting a briefing on the Zero Waste Plan. And I think there's been a lot of really good work done on that in the past 6 weeks and a lot of really great progress made. And y'all will hear more about it on Monday. I don't think we're all the way there yet, but I want to praise staff for working on this and council members who have been directing them. A lot has been accomplished. I want to ask a question about the Park Department and the Park Board. Last month I was talking about how in 2008 the Park Board voted to prohibit gas drilling on city-owned parklands. Well, Trinity East sent a letter to the City Plan Commission a couple of weeks ago saying that they've worked in concert with and with the support of the Park Department to develop the current proposal for gas drilling, which of course is on city-owned parkland. So if the Park Board voted to prohibit that in 2008, I guess the question is, what is Trinity East referring to when they say that they've worked with the Park Department to develop the current plan? They submitted their gas drilling applications to the city in March of 2011, and Mayor Rawlins was Park Board President in 2010 and 2011. So the big question that I have is, Mayor Rollins, whether you worked with Trinity East to develop the current gas drilling proposal. It's a pretty big question, I think. There was a great celebration here of the Trinity River, beautiful photographs showing the natural resource, the treasure that we have in Dallas. And so the fact that two of the gas drilling sites are on the banks of the river, it's very contradictory to our vision for what we love about Dallas, I believe. There have been two national reports that are just released this week that talk about the economics of gas drilling and how it could be really a bubble economy. One of the authors of this report will be at a summit, a national summit that's being held here in Dallas on March 2nd and March 3rd. And I'd encourage everyone to come to that or to learn more about it or to read some of the reports from the speakers that are nationally recognized that are coming to this event next weekend. And I guess finally I wanted to say thank you to Mayor Rollins for going to Austin and testifying for water conservation. There's a bill that has just been filed that would restrict local cities from passing their own ordinances about gas drilling, just like it was filed last legislative session. And so we hope that Mayor Rollins will come and testify against that bill as well, because obviously it would restrict us from being a home rule city to be able to decide how we want to govern ourselves when it comes to an important issue like gas drilling. So we're here to help defeat that bill, and we hope that you all will take a stance on that. Thanks again very much.
Thank you, Mr. Trahan.
Your final speaker this morning is Sim Griffin. Sim Griffin is not present. We proceed now to your voting agenda. Item number one is approval of minutes of the February 6, 2013 City Council meeting.
We got a motion and a second. Any discussion or edits? Hearing none. All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you. Item number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. You have for individual appointment to the Cultural Affairs Commission, Stephen S. Harris is nominated by Councilmember Allen. Mr. Harris has performing arts experience. To the Civil Service Board adjunct members, Rebel Webster is nominated by Councilmember Coop. To the Permit and License Appeal Board, Antonia Hubert is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. For full council appointment, you have to the Reinvestment Zone 8 Board Design District, Dustin R. Gadberry is a registered voter, is nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano.
Move to approve.
Okay, motion and second. Any other comments, discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
You do have one vice chair nominee. That is Michael Lavolo to the Community Development Commission, nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano.
Move to approve. Second.
Got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
That concludes your voting agenda items.
Thank you. We'll start our briefing. About 25 minutes late, but not doing too bad. Judge Hill, I think you're leading this effort, so I'd like to give you the microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mayor and Council, as you know, every year we, the City of Dallas, set forth a legislative program to be considered by the United States Congress. Congress, again, as you know, convened on January 1st. We will be in Washington in March in conjunction with the National League of Cities. That is the time where we will have face-to-face meetings with our congressional delegation, and we will talk from our legislative program. You see the program in your briefing. You will notice that the congressional legislative program looks different than the state legislative program because we attack it differently. We present it differently. The entire approach is different. Brett Wilkinson is with the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs. He's the director of that office. He is going to talk about the program that we will present. Please know that this was presented in detail to the Legislative Committee, which is composed of all of the chairs. And as a result of that, I asked Brett to be very brief and to be prepared to answer questions. However, if anyone wants any more detail, we're more than happy to provide that at this time. Mr. Wilkinson, please proceed.
Thank you.
And I want to just dovetail on what Judge Hill said. We have a very strong, supportive congressional delegation, and they have. We've had a historically a great relationship with them, and some of our champions in the delegation spend a lot of capital looking out for us and protecting our interests. In a minute, Ralph Garbushian is going to go through some of the issues that are in our program that are a particular concern to us, but I just wanted to give a short overview of what we're expecting from the 113th Congress. We know that they're expected to take up a number of complex issues, immigration reform, gun control legislation, reauthorization of the transportation bill. The last one that they passed, MAP 21, was only a two-year bill. Passage of the next Water Resources Development Act, which is very important to us on the Trinity River Project. Potential postal service reform, reauthorization of violence against women, and maybe a farm bill. And while all these are big issues that we need to watch, some of them impacting cities, we're really more concerned about the huge financial challenges that Congress must address and how that's going to impact us, including sequestration, which you've all heard about, which is set to start at the beginning of next month. They'll have to deal with the debt ceiling. They still have to complete work on the FY 2013 budget. The current six-month CR expires soon, and then they have to begin work on the 2014 budget, talking about overhauling the tax code, and they're looking at entitlement reform. So all of these challenges could have huge impacts to local governments, and while we support efforts as a city for the federal government to reduce the federal deficit and the debt, we want Congress to do so in a responsible way, not on the backs of cities. Cities have already taken the brunt on a lot of these cuts to some of our core local government programs, such as CDBG, home, and some of our public safety programs. And then some of the other issues that we're concerned about, chiefly tax-exempt bonds, could be caught up in some kind of grand bargain in all of this. So we're really going to have to be diligent and watch these closely. On slide 3, we've listed our general principles. While we try to do our best in anticipating what Congress is going to be taking up over the next 2 years, we don't have a crystal ball, but basically the principles state that the city supports legislation that upholds our home rule authority, opposes any legislation that diminishes that authority, and then, as I mentioned earlier, we support efforts to reduce the debt and deficit, but we want them to do it in a responsible way. So the next slide lists some of the issues of importance. Ralph's going to talk about these. I wanted to talk quickly about the Trinity River. It's really the only Dallas-specific issue in our program. It continues to be one of our highest priorities. We've received, again, amazing support because of the work of our congressional delegation. We've had over $220 million in federal appropriations to date, as well as the $459 million authorization in the last WERDA bill for the Dallas Floodway Project. Each year we develop a separate program, legislative program for the Trinity River alone, and we have a separate lobbying team that works for us in Washington to help implement that. We don't have specific asks for the Trinity yet this year. We're still working on those. But generally, we will be going after continuing funding for the Dallas Floodway Extension Project, funding to help continue with the environmental impact study that continues to go on related to the Dallas Floodway. And then we're looking at doing some clarity language in the next WERDA bill from the authorization we got during in the last WERDA bill. So again, we want to keep the Trinity on everyone's radar screen. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ralph, who can talk through some of these other important issues.
Ralph, you there?
I am.
I think you're on.
Oh, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Good morning.
Morning.
And I think, Brett, if I heard correctly, you just hit the first one of the Trinity River Corridor?
Yes.
And I'll just speak briefly to each of the next bullets, and these are the highlights from the much, much larger and comprehensive legislative program that's in front of you. And a lot of these issues that are highlighted here will be addressed possibly in the context of the overarching budget and tax issues that you hear so much about in the media each day, the various fiscal cliffs, sequestration, tax reform, all of those issues that Congress is facing in the next month and has been facing in the recent years. The second bullet after Trinity River Corridor is core local government grant programs. By those, we mean CDBG, home, law enforcement assistance, homeland security grants. And I think it's important to look at deficit reduction efforts to date have almost all come from domestic discretionary spending, which means that they've come They've hit these programs especially hard. And just to give you some numbers, since FY 2010, CDBG has been cut 26%, home 45%, SLUC law enforcement assistance 33%, Homeland Security grants 36%. So I think we've, in the pending FY 2013 appropriations bills, right now we're on a six-month CR, but in the appropriations bills that Congress was considering, they would have reversed some of those cuts, and I think that will continue to be a focus this year, and then looking at FY 2014 as well to maintain and perhaps even grow those programs. Tax-exempt bonds has emerged as a threat, I think, over the past year. The administration in their FY 2013 budget proposal proposed capping the exemption at the 28% tax bracket. The Simpson-Bowles Commission, as part of their proposal to eliminate all what they call tax expenditures, would have eliminated the tax exemption from municipal bonds entirely. I think that continues to be a threat, and I think that when you come here next month, that's going to be one of the issues that you'll have to hit hard with the delegation, is how important the tax exemption is for local government infrastructure investments. Highway and transit programs, I know we just got done dealing with reauthorization of those programs, but MAP 21, which was enacted last year, is a two-year bill. In a lot of ways, that was a status quo bill in terms of funding and in terms of program structure, although there was some program consolidation. But that expires at the end of FY 2014, which means that this Congress is going to be looking at reauthorizing MAP 21. The main issue is, again, going to be how to fund those programs. Revenue to the Highway Trust Fund isn't keeping up with expenditures, and as that looks like it's going to continue, Congress is going to have to address that issue, and that will be the main roadblock to a long-term reauthorization of highway and transit programs. But that said, that will be a major issue in the 113th Congress, and I think that represents an opportunity for local governments to win back some of the funding that we lost to the state in that last round of reauthorization. Sales tax fairness, those bills were introduced just this past week in the House and the Senate. They're the same bills, so in a lot of ways the House and Senate have pre-conferenced that, and I think momentum is building for passage of that legislation that would authorize the collection of sales tax from out-of-state remote retailers. At this point, I think the big issue is finding a vehicle for those bills. I don't think they'll move as standalone bills. They'll move probably as part of a broader piece of legislation. But right now, momentum is behind those bills, and I think that over the next weeks, we'll be working to get as much of the delegation to co-sponsor those bills as we can. Telecommunications is kind of a perennial issue. I don't see any legislative threats on the immediate horizon, but I think we continue to worry about what the FCC might do. We've had actions from the FCC to limit your zoning authority, and we continue to be concerned about possible FCC actions that would preempt your authority to manage your rights of way and collect rent for their use. And also in that general telecommunications issue is the expiration of the Internet Tax Freedom Act next year. That's huge for the city in terms of the line access fees that you collect from telecommunications providers. And that's going to, protecting that is going to be an important issue next year. And then finally, public safety and homeland security. The city and the region in general have been beneficiaries of the Urban Area Security Initiative. That's a Homeland Security grant program that goes to high-threat urban areas. The administration in their FY 2013 budget proposed consolidating that and all Homeland Security grants into a single block grant to the state. That's one that your public safety officials and some of you have lobbied personally. I think that we'll have to wait and see what the administration's budget says when it comes out later this month, but I think that they're backing off, at least on the Urban Area Security Initiative part of that, and our hope is that will remain a separate program. So I guess I'll stay on the line for questions.
Right. Well, thank you very much. Well done in summarizing, which is what I asked you to do. Council members, the full briefing is in your materials. At least half of the council has already seen this. However,
Brett Ralph or I will be happy to answer any questions that you have, take any suggestions for additions or deletions if you have any.
Thank you, Judge. Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Adams.
Yes, I'm going to say Judge Hill, Brunsfield Hill. We had a conference call yesterday, Brunsfield, from the NLC, the board, and the bigger concern is the tax-exempt bond. And my concern is on looking at our 2012 bond for year 2013-2014, Mary, if Congress changed the rule, whatever, what is our debt going to be with a program to sell those bonds? So if we look at 2013 to 2014, I'm thinking probably about $50 million, close to that. Is that about a figure?
It takes away the tax exemption on our bonds, and depending on how they put the rules together, it could cost us, yes.
About $50 million. So that is a big hit. And so, Von Sear, that when we go to the Hill, we got to push that issue. I talked to Senator Connell on Saturday. He's open to that agreement. Mayor, I know you went to the Mayor Conference and you spoke on behalf of the City of Dallas, but it's going to be a big concern on our 2013-2014 budget to all the cities. And we need help, Von Sear. I mean, that's my number one objective, because it's going to cost us so much.
Mr. Atkins, thank you for that conversation. This is an issue for every city in the country, and especially the big cities. And the danger, as some of you have heard me say already, is that the left and the right are agreeing on this. That's a huge danger for cities when the Democrats and the Republicans and everybody in between are agreeing. The mayor has spoken on this. We've talked to Congressman Veazey on this. We've talked to Congresswoman Johnson. You mentioned Senator Corning. If there's anyone who knows Senator Cruz, please let me know, because we've got to get face-to-face with everybody and press and stress the importance of not taking away this tax exemption.
Thank you. Ms. Davis.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I have a concern about CDBG funding and home funding. Are they saying that CDBG funding will be cut, 26%? And the home fund will be cut 45%? That's a huge, huge cut. Right now, we was cut last year, Vancell and Mary. We was cut both in CDBG funding. If they cut CDBG funding, what are we looking at next year if it's cut?
Ms. Davis, there is the possibility that the core local government programs will be cut again. As you know, they've taken most of the hit. As Ralph said, discretionary domestic spending has taken a huge hit, and the Congress is looking at that again. Our part, I'm going to ask Ralph to say something about this as well, but our part is to press our case, because without these core local government programs or with substantially reduced funding, we cannot do the things that we need to do.
Oh, I agree.
Such as apartments, single-family homes. But Ralph, would you say a word about that, please?
Ralph, you were asked about that?
Could you repeat? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Judge Hill.
It was the cuts to the CDBG funding.
The threats to cutting further core local government programs such as CDBG and home.
Right, those have been as you were discussing, those have been cut significantly. I think the good news is for FY 2013 on CDBG, we're looking in both the House and Senate bills at a slight increase when and if they ever finalize FY 2013 spending. Those would go to CDBG would go from $2.9 billion to $3.3 or $3.2, depending on which bill. And home in the House would also see a slight increase as well. But I think you're correct that those threats remain, both in terms of sequestration and as well looking ahead to FY 2014. I think that's going to be something the city has to continue to fight. And I think it's important to note as we look at these grant programs and as we look at domestic discretionary spending, a lot of the talk about deficit reduction is that everybody has to do their part. Well, I think it's important to note that you, and by you I mean the Dallas City Council and cities across the country, have done your part. Almost all deficit reduction to date has been on the domestic discretionary spending side.
Mayor, if you let me, as the housing chair, we was cut about 35% last year in home funding, and of course, we was cut huge in CDBG funding. The home funds, I mean, if we cut it, and it's going to seem like it's going to be cut some more, it is going to be extremely hard to do some of the programs that we're doing with home funding, with home funds, and CDBG funds. So have we looked at, Brad, on if these funds are cut, how much we'll be left with? Have we kind of looked at that?
Well, we don't know that yet.
No.
We won't know until we get, if we get cut, then we'll have to look and see how much that will impact Dallas and how much money in those programs comes to Dallas.
Okay, and this is around the country. This is the big pie.
Yes.
Everything
Everybody will be cut.
So this 45% includes the whole country.
Yes.
And the 26% includes the whole country. Now, there are normally a bunch of cities like New York and some of those states who kind of come down and lobby a little harder, perhaps, because they use a lot of home funds, like New York and New Jersey and places like that. Have you seen a outcry for those type of cities coming out?
Ms. Davis, nobody lobbies harder than Dallas. I promise you. We are the hardest lobbying group on the Hill.
Okay.
The core local government funding is a formula funding. It's based on population. So the money goes to the cities based on the formula. And if it's cut, everybody in the country gets cut, but you get your formula percentage.
Absolutely.
And we have no way of knowing what we will get until Congress acts. The only thing we can do is get face to face with folks and keep pressing to say we can't get cut anymore.
Okay.
And this is also a major priority for the public interest groups that we belong to, such as the National League of Cities and the U.S. Conference of Mayors.
Well, I do know perhaps some of those other cities perhaps get more home funds because sometimes they're larger than we are.
It's based on the formula.
Absolutely, it's based on the formula and CDBG and home funds. Okay, then. I guess we just have to. Now, who do we have to? If we don't go to the National League of Cities, then who do we need to talk to?
If you will let me or Brett know, we will get you an assignment even if you're not in D.C.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Hearing no other things, I'll just say, Brett, thank you for your leadership in this, and Ralph, your hard work, and Councilwoman Hill, thanks. Which it's pros. You guys are pros, and I appreciate it. I will ask a perception question of you, Ralph. You live up there. When you go in and to office and tell them you're from the city of Dallas, or You're running around town at a party and you tell them the city of Dallas. What's the perception these days on the Hill about Dallas?
Generally positive. Certainly with your delegation, positive. I think, you know, you don't necessarily see eye to eye with your whole delegation on every single issue, but I always get good feedback about, particularly about how the city interacts with the delegation and I think in federal agencies, I think a lot of what the city of Dallas is doing is recognized as a national example of best practices. Certainly in terms of what you've done with transit, what your plans are for transit-oriented development and some of your economic development programs. And so I think that generally positive and welcoming.
Good. Well, I just thought I'd ask that qualitative question. Thank you very much.
And, Mr. Mayor, final word on the best practices Dallas's practices being adopted, I want the council to know that our reentry program, Dallas's, is a reentry program that has been adopted around the country. The Department of Labor looked at what we were doing and said, let's take this out. I had the opportunity to meet with several cabinet-level people on that, and so we are looked at, Mr. Mayor, very positively. Two other things, council members. We do get some criticism from some sectors of the media about the fact that we go to Washington. And it does cost money for us to go to Washington. But the return on that investment is huge, and it's absolutely important for our people, our citizens. So please, if you get that criticism, please understand that the return on that investment is about 10 or 20 to 1. I believe we spent $2,000 on a trip, and the return was $23 million. It's an investment worth making. When we go to Washington, we will have the logistics ready. The staff does an excellent, excellent job of preparing us. We will have everything ready to go. You will have your speaking parts, and we will do our usual coordinated effort that our delegation compliments us on continuously. Mr. Mayor, thank you for allowing us the opportunity. Brett and Ralph and all the staff, thank you so much for your help in getting this very, very important work done.
Thank you. Thank you, Brett. All right, let's move on to the next agenda. Oh, it is. There it is. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Well, we'll let her read it in the record.
Okay. Item number 3 is a resolution adopting the city's federal legislative agenda for the 113th Congress.
Second.
Any other discussion or questions? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried. Let's move to item B. I know we've done a lot of work in animal services, and it's been a while since we've had a report, and so we're looking forward to it.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Jimmy Martin, the Director of Co-Compliance, and Jody Jones is our Division Director for Animal Services, and we should be having a visit from our Rudy the rescue dog, and he'll be coming through here passing out goodie bags for.
Is that Miss Coop in it?
Rudy's alter ego is Catherine Baxter, and so we appreciate her putting on the suit and doing this. I also take this opportunity to introduce our Animal Shelter Commission member, Mary Spencer. She's the chair of the Animal Shelter Commission. Goodie bags.
We have about 10 mascots of various operations, and what I've asked Frank to do is give us a mascot group portrait, so we're working on doing that. We've got dumpsters and mayflies and all sorts.
It's come out to a Halloween thing a few times. Thank you.
Rudy,
can you touch him?
Rudy.
Oh, wow.
Good kid.
Rudy.
Monica.
Masha.
Yeah,
girl.
Good idea.
Hold on. Our saving lives, Dan.
How easily will it take? So. Please, let's proceed. Let's proceed.
All kids at heart, Mayor.
And the purpose of this briefing this morning is to provide an overview of and highlights of our accomplishments, priorities, and initiatives. I'll take this opportunity to recognize our volunteers who took these pictures. So, a lot of our activity is dealing around marketing, trying to so we give thanks to Sylvia Elzebon Photography, DogBiscuitsPhotos.com, and Jay Burnett Photography. Thank you.
Can you speak up just a little bit?
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
The next page really highlights, indicates our success that we've had recently as far as...
you need to speak up.
Okay. We have a record live release rate last year, fiscal year 2012, 33.9, and a record adoption year, 4771 adoptions. And also, we followed up. We're off to a great start in just this fiscal year. We've had a 53.6% live release rate in December and 677 adoptions for December. And also, I've got news for release for this January. We have a 51.3 live release rate and 611 adoptions. So, the next page pretty much shows a graphical presentation of our live release rate comparison between the fiscal years. And to put numbers to the percentages, it indicates from 2008 to 2012, 3,300 more lives were saved. And our adoptions, we are really blowing up. We are really increasing that. The 2011, compared to 2011-2012, indicates a 76% increase in adoptions from 2710 to 4771. The next slide, please. The transfers indicates our good relationships that we have with our rescue partners. And without them, our job is a lot more difficult, so we really appreciate their efforts also. Can we go back to the adoption one? Page 6. 76% increase. I also want to thank the City Council for approving the discounts that in 2011 offers a discount. And I want to note to you that also that this has not impacted our revenues because we increased our volume and we make it more of an adoption event through Valentine's Day and things like that. So basically, we're increasing the adoption without affecting our revenues. And go back to page 8. This trend shows that we have a decreased trend in euthanasia intake. And this is indicated by our next chart. We have a very aggressive spay and neuter program. And more spay and neuters lead to less litters and less unwanted animals, which, of course, leads to a decrease in intake and a decrease in euthanasia. Overview of animal services. Basically, we have three units in the Animal Services Division: shelter operations, medical operations, and field operations. We have a budget of $7.2 million and 93 FTEs. I want to take this opportunity to introduce our Division Manager of Animal Services, Jody Jones. She has extensive municipal shelter experience, and she has past success in her other endeavors as far as increasing live release rate. So I'll turn over the briefing to Jody Jones.
Good morning. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here and grow with the Dallas community. If we can go to the next slide. I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of our different services, starting with our shelter services. And again, the sheltering services for the division are the ones that are located at 1818 Northwest Moreland. We house for about 600 animals a day there. We take in about 30,000 animals annually at the shelter, and we provide lost and found services to the public, people who have lost their pets or found pets that have nowhere to go, as well as we provide adoption and transfer services at the shelter. Next slide. From our key improvements in the shelter operations area since I've become a member of the team here in Dallas, is we were fortunate enough to hire an operations manager and Oh, there she is, Dr. Kate McManus. Dr. McManus is a veterinarian. She also has her master's in public health, which some of you may not realize is very important to us, as we are also responsible for rabies prevention and control within the city, as well as she is one of a dozen veterinarians that have completed the National Maddie's Fund Shelter Medicine Specialization Program nationally. So we're very lucky to have her with us. We've also worked on creating a little bit healthier environment at the shelter by dividing the space in the shelter up so we keep healthy animals with healthy animals, animals that need medical treatment separately, as not to get them sick. We've also expanded the use of social media to make sure our public knows what services we have available to the public and what's going on in our jurisdictions in the different areas. Next slide. Our medical operations unit, we have in-house medical care for our animals, as well as spay-neuter surgeries available for the animals that are going home from the shelter. We have three veterinarians that provide those services, as well as we make the use of some temporary veterinarians, as well as veterinarian technicians. Next slide. On medical services, some of the key improvements, one of the biggest things that we've done to change the face of animal control in the city is we started vaccinating all animals on intake. That creates a healthier population and creates animals at the shelter that will go into homes and stay healthy. We've enhanced our surgical opportunities. We used to do about 200 spay-neuters a month. We're now doing about 100 a week, and one out of five of those surgeries are actually offered to the public to help them get their pets neutered and come into compliance. Next slide. Again, some more of those key improvements. We've got a veterinarian that's been hired on as a medical manager. We've revised the medical team structure so that we actually have coverage with medical services and veterinarians 7 days a week now at the shelter. And we've implemented various treatment protocols to support care and treatment of the animals and finding them homes and helping them get back to their owners in a healthy status. Next slide. So an overview of our field service operations. We enforce the city code and the Texas ordinances. We get about 54,000 calls for service every year. We do provide services on a 24/7 basis with a focus on public safety and injured animals. And some statistics are there for you. Our key improvements in the field service area is really a change in focus. It's getting ingrained in our community, understanding what the needs of the community are and bringing them resources, such as we are now providing free neutering services to people that can't come in compliance with the law because of a resource obstacle. This is called the Big Fix for Big D. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later. We're working with 311 on a regular basis to talk about how can we help educate the public better when they call in and give them the services that they needed, as well as using technology to better target the services we're providing in our community, such as mapping some of those calls for services and the types of services that are needed in the different areas. Next slide. The priorities in the field service area is we really need to focus on increasing our spay-neuter outreach and our officer outreach initiatives and our technology initiatives to get into the community and address the issues specific to the communities that the people are having challenges in and create a healthier environment. We have multiple partnerships, and partnerships for us are really the way to go. We need to enhance our partnerships with our community and the resources in our community to deliver greater services. We are focusing the Big Fix for Big D, which I spoke about, is a collaborative opportunity that's funded by the Dallas Animal Funders Coalition for the Dallas Foundation, and it's a partnership between the SPCA of Texas, the Metroplex Animal Coalition, Kaufman County Awareness Project, and for the first time ever, Dallas Animal Services is at that table. We have provided over 4,600 spay-neuter surgeries since the launch of the program in June of 2012. That means that we've prevented over 30,000 animals being born into our community that would have no place to go and potentially be wandering the streets. Next slide. To keep this going strong and going forward, we're going to continue to enhance our marketing efforts. You met Rudy earlier today, and certainly having somebody to get out there and spread the message like that helps. We're going to continue to engage our community to offer the services and increase awareness for all of the services that we provide at the shelter and the field services division. We're going to continue to build our social media presence. It's been extremely effective in changing the face of animal welfare and the reputation of Dallas Animal services in our community. I want to give a shout out to Frank Librio and the PIO office. I hope you all have seen our fun billboards that are up on the Clear Channel digital billboards throughout the city. Frank and our team have collaborated to get those all donated to us, to the city, no charge. The artwork is all done in-house by our creative minds. Rita, Catherine, myself, and all of the DAS team get together and come up with those fun ads. And Juan, is it from the PIO office? Gabe, sorry. Can't forget him. Next slide. Staying with those successes that we've had, building on those partnerships are just key to everything working in concert together. I want to thank you for your appointees to the Animal Shelter Commission. They've helped to make our job and bring the work that we're doing into our communities and bring the needs of the communities back to DAS so we can target some of our programs at those needs. And also the commission got together and formed the Dallas Companion Animal Project, which I hope you all have heard about, and it's kind of Dallas's homegrown version of the no-kill movement to save animals and enhance the community's awareness about animal issues and improve the quality of life for not just animals but their neighbors in our community. We're going to also work to continue our collaborations with PetSmart Charities, ASPCA, National Animal Control Association, Dallas Foundation, and all of our private partnerships, Meadows Foundation, to continue to bring non-city resources to the animal welfare issues in the city, get at addressing some of those problems like spay-neuter, putting tags on animals when they leave the shelter, those kind of things that help keep them off the street. Okay, and that about wraps up. We want to thank you for the opportunities. Next slide. Sorry. Oh, sorry. Next slide. We want to thank you for the opportunities and just share some of the very happy faces that have visited us at Animal Services. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hasso.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Jody, for the presentation. Thank you, Jimmy Martin. We worked very closely together beginning in 09 with the issues that we were having there, and thanks to Jody and a very, very good commission, animal commission, and certainly through the help of Mary Spencer. You know, I think this is a great story. We could not have said this story 2 and 3 years ago. So you guys have done a magnificent job. The social media, the information that people get on how quickly the animals are being adopted every day, almost every hour, really does help because it makes you feel like, oh, I need to go adopt one, an animal. So certainly with my task force, Dallas Loves Animals, we are continuing to schedule animal adoptions in every district, all 14 of them. We're halfway there, and I look forward to continuing that process to help our council members get their little cards showing them with an animal, and I think we've got Tanel Atkins is the latest one, and really, really a good public relations effort to get animals adopted in every district. So thank you so much.
Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Ms. Hasso. Ms. Morgan.
Thank you. This is a great presentation. After so many years of such great challenges, the results really speak for themselves, and thank you both for your leadership, and thank your team. I have a question, just something I need to clarify. Tell me what is included in the release rate when you use that term.
The live release rate is made up of three components: the adoptions that we adopt out, the animals that are transferred to our rescue partners, and also the ones that are returned to their owners.
Okay, and then the rescue partners are groups that generally take a specific breed, is that, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. There are some breed-specific ones, but a majority of them are just take animals and try to place them.
And these are just private volunteer groups?
Yes, that's true.
Okay, thank you.
And 1C. Yeah.
Thank you, and again, congratulations.
Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. It is just so encouraging to keep hearing these good reports after so many years of difficulties. So thank you, thank the board, and for all of your hard work. I do have two questions. On page 7, the return to owner, How come each year the numbers go down when it seems like with microchips and things you'd think that the numbers would be going up?
And actually, going down is a good trend.
Oh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What that means is because more animals have microchips on, more animals are wearing identification such as licensing or name tags, which we now give out at the shelter, they don't have to come into the shelter. We get a phone call from a citizen finding the animal with a tag on, and we're able to reunite them right out there in the field and get them back home quickly as opposed to having them come in the shelter and using more city resources to process them through the system. So we're thrilled that we're seeing that number go down.
Okay.
And we're thrilled that we're being able to get those animals back quicker to the homes that they belong in.
Because that's really an interesting explanation. I'm glad I asked that question because I thought that's trending in the wrong direction when it's really trending in the
right direction. Well, yeah, the first time I looked at the numbers, I went, what?
My other question was, on page 10, you said you had 93 FTEs at the shelter. So does that also include in the 93 the field ops division?
Yes, that's overall
so
for
that's
the entire
everything.
Division.
So that's everything.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for all the good work. Thank you.
Mr. Gaudet.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jones, tell me how much closer we're getting to be a no-kill shelter.
Well, we're on track. There is no national standard for the growth rate of percentage for your live release rate, but we are hitting and exceeding 10% a year. So we're on track for a six-year plan, which is most cities are going after.
Great. And we are working towards that end, I hope.
Absolutely. The Dallas Companion Animal Project, which is the Animal Welfare Commission and the City Administration's project, is targeted at bringing those resources together, mm-hmm. programs, resources, networking, and supporting Dallas Animal Services to make sure that live release rate hits the 90%, which is our goal.
That's great. Now, tell me this. What triggers a spay and neuter when you get these dogs? Some of them you're going to euthanize, so what makes you want to spay and neuter a dog? Is it one that you know you're going to get adopted, or explain that to me.
Well, we want all animals spayed and neutered in our community. However, at Dallas Animal Services, what we do is we wait until those animals have a placement option. So if they're adopted, the next day they go for surgery, and then that gives the owner the opportunity to go get what they need for the animal, neuter them.
Okay, well, you're already putting them out. That's why they're getting spayed and neutered.
Oh, yes.
And also with the shots, giving them their shots, you don't give them all shots.
Yes.
Correct.
All animals entering the shelter receive a basic set of vaccinations and deworming to protect not just the animals in our shelter, but also our workers against disease that can be transmitted.
Okay, so every dog and I guess you do cats also.
Absolutely.
They all get shots when they're brought into the shelter.
Yes, and that's something we started in 2011.
Okay, great. Also, I'd like to thank Ms. Spencer and her group and the board. I know they're doing a great job at the shelter. I mean, it's like they're there working with you, I believe, trying to get things done and help you move forward. But I appreciate everything you've done up to date, and I know it's going to get even better. So thank you very much. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you for your report and for the work that you are doing. I have a what do I do question. Twice in the last month, as I left home, I saw three dogs, two different occasions, in the road. I knew what had happened, that they had just gotten out. And although I slowed down, that didn't mean everybody was going to slow down. And I didn't know what to do. So what do I do when I see the animal? Because I'm not going to touch it. What do I do?
And again, I think you need to be cognizant if there is a public safety hazard there. If, you know, sometimes when you have animals in a roadway, it is a public safety concern, and we do need to partner with our partners at PD and get the traffic situation under control so nobody's injured. But calling 311 and reporting those animals is critical to us being able to address the situation, because even if we don't get there at that time that the animals, because sometimes we will be out on priority calls and it may take us longer to get there, we will then have that on our mapping of how we respond to calls. So when we have downtime, if there's a large volume of stray animal calls in an area, we'll actually send a separate team out to go out and look for large volumes of animals.
These are not strays. I could tell. They are not strays. These animals were very well cared for. The two that I saw the last time actually had collars on. I could tell they had just gotten out. And I don't, in the particular neighborhood that I'm talking about, I don't have a stray animal problem. And so that means that I don't know when somebody will show up. And that's what I'm asking you, not about a stray animal problem, but about very well cared for animals that I know have just gotten out of the backyard when somebody went to work. Do I just call 311? Is that the solution?
That's the best option, yes.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Michelle. Any other? Yes, Ms. Hassel.
Yeah, that's second fine. Round, we left out two very important people, Joey Zapata, who took over animal services. You had it under code compliance. I think you heard from me every week in 2009 about you know, what issues we still had out there. So thank you for responding and for doing all the work you did to put this great team together. And also I have to do a shout out to my commission member Johnny England, who has been a very long time advocate for animals and continues her own social media campaign to get animals adopted. So Johnny, if you're listening, thank you also.
Thank you. I just want to echo the compliments on the performance of this department. It really is turning into a best practice. I mean, you've got clear metrics, goals, you've got strategies around them, you're holding yourselves accountable for them, and you're creating a real public-private initiative in this. So congratulations, and Mary, thank you for leading this effort. Your passion, but also your wisdom about how you lead has been great. Would you please pass on to the hundreds and hundreds of volunteers that this city council really appreciates how the community has gotten involved in it? There's still a lot of work to do, but thank you for this. I want to follow up on Ms. Hill's question a little bit. When somebody does call 311, what's the chance that those dogs will be caught? I mean, is it a 1 in 4 or 50%, or most of the time it's done?
I don't have the exact numbers, but I will tell you that we respond to the calls daily based on priorities. And again, so it's really going to vary based on the time of day. I will tell you it also depends on the animals, because as you brought up, these are owned pets and probably more social, so they're likely to hang around people a little bit more, where true stray dogs, typically you see them and they're gone, they're moving, you know. So then when we get to the location they were reported at, the animals are no longer there. So as I said, that's one of the things that we're looking as we go forward and we start to integrate technology more into the work that we're doing, so that we can come back with some more of those hard numbers.
Yeah, because we do get from citizens all the time a situation like this, and we want to make, I want to have a sense that we are being able to not only respond but take care of those needs and also protect those animals at the same time. Anyway, Ms. Medrano.
Yes, Jody, thank you very much for the report, and Jimmy as well. To follow up on what the mayor just said, someone reported a stray dog. What is the, I guess, the protocol or the process? They go to that address or that 100 block. They don't see the dog. Obviously, the dog has run away. Did they go, you know, maybe two blocks over, one block over? Do they stay in the area for a few minutes? What can people expect?
Well, it's going to depend a lot on the basis of the call. If it's an aggressive loose animal, they're going to obviously commit more resources to addressing that issue, and depending on the needs of the day. If they've got, you know, five injured animal calls waiting, their surveillance of that area is going to be much more limited because those priorities are hanging out there. But again, as I said, they're certainly going to drive up and down that street, probably circle around that block to make sure that they've done an initial scour. Certainly, if there's an opportunity, the citizen has left their information, give them a call, touch base with them to see, could they, do they know which house the animal came from, that kind of thing.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carraway?
Hey, thank you, Mayor. Real quick, you know, I love this little deal here, and I want to make sure that we begin to promote these. We should hang them on the elevators and everywhere in City Hall so the folks, well, they can really understand this is a little bag, you know, to pick up the poop, and so it's good. I also want to just say that there's this little dog, little lucky dog, and the little lucky dog name is Annie. And Annie came from the animal shelter, and Annie was adopted, and I adopted Annie, and Annie is a part of my family. Annie is Annie Carraway, but spayed, neutered, the whole nine yards. So I encourage folks, you know, if you need another little friend, go over there and please adopt one of the dogs. Annie is just a great dog, and it's great to bring in new friends and keep supporting. I really support you guys and Jimmy. As I told Mary, you're just simply the greatest, okay? So now I expect for those other little stray dogs over in my district that are still running around for us to get over there and do something about it. But I just want to say that and encourage Mayor. These are the greatest. It's filled with little bags, right?
Yeah.
And the little bag comes out, so it clips to you, so you have no excuse not to go and pick
up. Yeah, I encourage you to put it right on your dog leash so that this way you have your pet on the leash and your bag.
Ms. Davis?
Thank you so much. I was looking at the information in the package that you guys put in our little container. Is there any way that we can get copies of these into our rec centers, the people who have dogs in the area? Even if we may look copies of this.
Absolutely.
I really do like this to let them know what their pet needs. Do y'all have a dog store at your location?
No, we don't.
It would be nice if we had a dog store there. And I know I'm looking at Mary. Mary, like, oh, Lord. But it would be nice if we had a little dog store there. We could come and buy little stuff like this. Would make a nice little bookmarker. You know, little T-shirts, little things, dog food, snacks. I mean, yeah, T-shirts that says the Dallas Animal Service or something like that. And it's another way of revenue, I would think, for the organization. But if we can get some of these, I would love some to pass out and put at the different rec centers.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm going to say, Joy, you're doing a good job. Joy is quiet, Mary.
Yeah.
but we just make sure that we continue to deal with the stray dogs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis, and thank you, everybody, and a great presentation again. We'll move to what we're going to do. We're going to move to item C because it's a brief briefing that Ms. Soom's going to do, and then we will break for executive session. We think we've got a very short executive session, 10 or 15 minutes, and then we will be the reminder for the City Council. We're going to have a press conference announcing historic anniversary commemoration at the Nasher, and we'll take anybody over there that wants to go. The vans will be loaded on L1 Green at 11:30, and the event starts at noon. So it's actually cool for a lot of the districts what the Nasher is going to be doing. So it's something I think you might want to be part of. So with that, Ms. Soom.
We have briefed one of the council committees on the ARA, and I just wanted to take this opportunity, and I think what we're going to do is just let me give a brief summary, and then if you've got questions, we'll attempt to answer them, because more than half of you have seen this. This is more commonly known as the stimulus money, and the reason that I wanted to brief is to tell you this is $130 million. about 80 of it on transportation, and the other 50 on stimulus of the economy. When we received this, I was very worried about getting this spent in a timely fashion and spent in an appropriate fashion, and we have large number of staff have worked on this in addition to their other jobs, getting things done and spending this money and stimulating the economy in our city. We've worked with the auditor to be sure we've done this the right way, because the federal government had lots of rules and regs on it, and it's worked out very well. And those of you that saw the briefing and have read this one today know that we made some significant differences in our city with this money, and I just wanted to be able to show you that and thank the hundreds of people in the city that had worked on this and getting this done, like I said, kind of on short notice when it came up, and in addition to all their other jobs. So if you have any questions, we'll be glad to try to answer them.
Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I want to compliment the staff on how well they took care of every one of the rules, every one of the regulations in reporting on this money. There were some very strict regulations attached to this money, and the timeline was very short. Many cities ended up having to give some of their money back. Mm-hmm. We gave back nothing. We were able to use it all. And did we get some more? We got more. That's what I thought, because we were so good at what we did. And that's because Brett Wilkinson and the rest of that staff, and if I could call all their names, I would. But there's one standing there. And Peter, what's your name? Rosa Fleming. I didn't know your last name. Rosa Fleming. Peter Brett is somewhere. And Anna Holmes is on that staff. Rosa does an awful lot of this because she writes the grants. Is that correct? But they all do. So my compliments to y'all for doing a very, very, very good job. Thank you.
Ms. Hill, thank you very much. Ms. Alonso.
Thank you. Madam Mayor, may I assume on page 8 it talks about the Weatherization Assistance Program, and I just wanted to ask if you could please update me with what's going on with the information that we provided to the county and where we are with the, what's the update, please? Because that's one of the biggest projects that I work on in West Dallas, so I want to make sure that we are on track. Thank you very much.
The county was able to weatherize, I believe it was 1,000 homes within the city of Dallas with the money that was transferred over to them, and we've expended almost all of that fund.
Yes, okay. We are, any more questions or comments? Okay, we are ready. Where is? Okay. Are we ready for the executive session?
Yeah.
Okay, it is 11:07, February the 20th. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from the Council with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda: Constant S. Rose versus City of Dallas, J.B. Pearsley versus City of Dallas. Estimated time, 15 minutes. Thank you very much. Please clear the room.
All right, it's 1:26 p.m. The Dallas City Council will come back into session, and we will pick up item D, the Farmers Market District Redevelopment Plan. And Ryan, thank you for your leadership on this. We've all been waiting with bated breath, so we're here and excited about this opportunity. And would you talk to us?
Okay. Good afternoon. We are here to talk about the Dallas Farmers Market and the potential future of the Dallas Farmers Market, and talk about the creation of a fresh food urban neighborhood in the heart of our town. So the purpose is to basically go over some of the redevelopment efforts that have taken place over the last, you know, few years in downtown. And when I say downtown, I really mean the Central Business District, not all of the fantastic growth that's occurred outside of it. And also review some of the current status of the Dallas Farmers Market, discuss some redevelopment goals for the Dallas Farmers Market, and review a proposed master agreement. again, sometimes we don't think about how far we've come over the last 10, 15 years, but we really have come a long way in the last 15 years. And the Arts District, of course, has come of age. Main Street, in and of itself, has probably seen the greatest transformation of all. It was once home to over 10 million square feet of subpar Class C office space, all empty and really not marketable, and all of that's been transformed into hotels and residential and retail. Convention Center, of course, we've added an entire exhibit hall. It's been being renovated. The Omni Hotel, of course, has opened, and last summer you all passed the Tourism Public Improvement District. If you look at the Arts District, of course, the Nashard that you just came from, Winspear, Wiley, the Performance Hall, and the Clyde Warren Park have all opened. In terms of buildings that have been renovated and turned into residential, the list just keeps getting longer and longer. And on this page, you see several of them, from the Davis all the way to the Mercantile. The next page, you've got the DP&L building, the Magnolia Hotel, Stone Street Gardens, Republic Tower, the Jewel Hotel, and of course the Jewel Hotel is being expanded again to add additional retail, a spa, and it's really growing and becoming fantastic. If you look at a summary of the actual progress that's been made, just within the loop during this 15 years, we've added 6,700 residential units, and within like a mile of downtown, we've added 24,000 residential units, which is the equivalent of building a new town over the last 15 years. We've doubled the number of hotel rooms within the loop. And again, back to that, the amount of office space, vacant office space we've taken off the market is over 10 million square feet. That is the equivalent of 10 Renaissance towers that we have actually turned into housing and hotels and other uses. And of course, we've added about 8.5 acres of parkland in the downtown area. Now, during that same 15 years, there has been some progress in the southeast part of downtown in the farmers market area, but it hasn't grown quite as fast and hasn't quite kept up with the northern and western portions of downtown. The Camden did come in. That was about 10, 15 years ago and built 900 apartments and 17 townhomes. At the time, though, they built it inward rather than outward to things have changed now, and we're into stoops and public places and pedestrian orientation, and this was kind of an interior focus, and that would be the opposite of the way it would be done today. The Dallas Farmers Market Shed 2, has been enclosed and acclimatized. It's now about 40% occupied. But other than that, there really hasn't been much change. The bridge did open, of course. It was planned, funded, and placed into operation. The next page basically shows some pictures of the farmers market itself. Clearly, it could use a little help. It needs some maintenance and needs a little spiffing up. So again, there hasn't been that much progress in this part of downtown, really, until now. Things are now starting to change on the southeast part of downtown. First, the 360 plan, the council adopted it in April of 2011, and it spelled out kind of what to do with about five areas of downtown, and Farmers Market was named as one of them. The 360 plan basically recommends turning this part of downtown into an urban neighborhood for people at all income levels. That does seem to be the way it's developing. The neighborhood is to be anchored by the Dallas Farmers Market and is envisioned to consist primarily of a mix of townhomes, condominiums, apartments, 3-4 stories tall, and some ground floor retail. And that's kind of what we're talking about today a little further on in this briefing. And it should include a strong pedestrian orientation. Y'all may have read the last couple weeks that the Park Department is reviewing an update of the Parks Master Plan funded by the Deckards, and this part of downtown has always kind of had a shortage of green space, and at least the draft master plan for parks includes about 4 different green areas for green space in this part of downtown. One of them is at Pearl and Jackson, which would be a fairly good sized park. There's the park that's basically being called the Bow Tie Park. It's Marilla crosses through the middle of it and looks like a little bow tie. There is the park on the east side of downtown, and the city owns part of that already. That's where we store those dumpsters for residential units. And we would need to add a little more land to that. And then there's the south side of Farmers Market. The master plan calls for the creation of what's called futsal fields and a community garden. And futsal is really just kind of a variation of soccer. It's extremely popular in South America, Europe, and Asia, and it's beginning to take hold here in the United States. There's a whole tournament and a league out of Carrollton that's becoming very well known. Other initiatives, the Continental Building, will be finished next month. It has 203 residential units in it and 5,000 square feet of retail, a $45 million investment. The Atmos Complex, Phase 1, is completely leased, and Phase 2 will be opening up in 2015. Farmers Market itself, the in-town homes, Farmers Market Square, there's been 21 townhomes completed, and there'll be 139 of them when finished. And I don't know about y'all, but every time I drive by there and I see that sold, it just amazes me. And their price point starts out at $300,000, and it's my understanding they're beginning to climb in value in that neighborhood. There's a woman in the audience that could vouch for that, I think, one of the neighbors. The Holiday Inn, the council approved a request for $108 for what will be a Holiday Inn on the north side of the Cedars, Miss Medrano's district. And this is really a blighted structure, and it's really kind of pulled down that corner of the Cedars, and so this should really help us. And an idea of having a hotel in this part of downtown in the Cedars is really would be a good anchor. Main Street Gardens, even though it was finished 4 years ago, it continues to attract more and more people and more and more investment and interest in this part of downtown. And the downtown Dallas folks will tell you it's really almost too busy, and we need some additional green space.
It's what?
Almost too busy.
Almost. Thank you.
Comments? Okay, all right. Nothing over there.
He's listening.
The Statler Hilton, although it does not have a new use just yet, it is being cleaned up. It's obviously been illuminated. It's much more marketable than it was before, and we're just waiting for a reuse for that particular building. UNT, if you went by that building today, you'd see they're popping the walls out to put in new windows, and so it'll be a fully functional college. It already is, but it'll be expanding. And soon the law school will be starting. I believe that starts in August. The next building, the courts building, this is a partnership with UNT to ultimately turn this building into the permanent law school. Once they get additional assistance from the state, we will be partnering with them to further renovate this building. The municipal building annex, this is where, right now our courts are on the hardwood side of this complex. We have been renovating this particular building, 2014 Main, and this is where the courts will go. There's several of you that have been very much involved in renovation of the courts building, and it'll be opening up this summer. 500 South Thurvey, this went to Mr. Atkins' committee yesterday for a TIF incentive package. The council will have the opportunity to vote on that next week. And this is a big investment, and it also calls for 200 hotel rooms and 238 apartment units. It's a $72 million investment, and it really will begin to bridge the area between the City Hall over to the Farmers Market, so it'd be a really nice push towards that direction. The bridge, through Ms. Davis's committee and others, there's been a huge push to try to reorient the entrance away from Farmers Market over to the west side, and to create basically a gathering area, waiting area, under roof with that's climate controlled, so that folks can get in and out. And we do believe this will help market the Farmers Market. Page 25, all at the same time, Cesar Chavez is being realigned. I'll just say it to make more sense, because the way it occurs through downtown right now, it's really kind of hard and confusing to get to the Farmers Market, and this will straighten it out a bit, give us more green space, and make it much easier to get from Central Expressway to the Farmers Market. The Presbyterian Church has been extremely active now in the east side of downtown, and the 508 Park improvements, the plan the Presbyterians have is to save the historic studio building and create some controlled activity areas in the neighborhood, and I've been told this is completely funded. Police Athletic League, again, this is the Presbyterian Church is behind that. The police department has been looking for a headquarters for the Police Athletic League for some time, where you can actually have a core unit to provide this service. And this is at 515 Park Avenue, and so this will create some visibility for the police department in the neighborhood as well. 1701 Canton is a project that has some transitional and permanent supportive housing. This is a project that this council has endorsed, the Farmers Market stakeholders has endorsed. It's a need in this community, and Mr. Killingsworth is working on that, and we should be finished with it in a couple years. So you put all that together. Does this thing work? You got to be smarter than the microphone, right? Does this work? Can you hear me?
No.
Can you hear me?
No.
Still not? Okay.
Sounds like that.
Silly.
All right, so if you look at this, this is just kind of a status of the neighborhood I just described to you, and all the stuff that's orange are projects that are basically under construction right now. The light blue is the farmer's market itself. The light green are parks that already exist. The dark green are parks that are on the Parks Master Plan draft, and the purple is the future. It's where we can continue to build this portion of downtown, whether they be townhouses or condominiums or commercial, we don't know just yet. The Master Plan, of course, calls for mid-level condo, townhouse, and apartments, and so that's probably what will happen, and we'll bring additional residents to this part of town. So now it's time to fix Farmers Market itself. Now, Farmers Market has been in operation since the 1940s, continuous operation during that entire period of time. The predominant land use in the area has always been warehouse and manufacturing. There is some limited office and residential uses, but there are large tracts of surface parking, especially to the west, and that would also be the same area that was purple in the last map I showed you, where we really have opportunity. The farmers market has sustained operating losses for the last several years, and it is subsidized by the Dallas Convention Center, which is also kind of strapped for cash. So this is an issue that we have to address. The market originally was intended for farmers selling fresh food on a daily basis. At this point in time, though, many of the vendors are not farmers. On any given day, many of the stalls are occupied by vendors selling produce. In spite of investing in shed number two, the leasing really hasn't picked up that much. The pedestrian experience is somewhat constrained at the farmers market. At shed four, the shed on the south, is not used at all. I'm sure the mayor can attest to the fact that the city's not very good at branding and marketing, and we could really use some help with that as it relates to farmers market. In many cases, the amount of leasable space far exceeds the amount of actual leased space, and so it kind of gives a feeling of emptiness and failure when you go there, because when you don't see it crowded, it just feels like maybe it's not working very well. The farmers market is disconnected from the rest of downtown by warehouses and a sea of parking, as you all know. Ms. Grayson loves the sea of parking. It's difficult for the city to stage large and small promotional events. We're not very good at that. And the farmers market is really big. It's really spread out. It's a little too impersonal, and it's very much auto-oriented. I mean, we've looked at farmers markets around the country, and there's not very many of them that you can have that basically you could drive through. And this one you can, and you can drive through all three of the four sheds at the farmers market. So we started working on this. We said, well, we need some redevelopment goals. And the first one was, well, we really need to implement the Downtown 360 plan. We need to implement the city's own strategic plan that calls for privatization of the market. We need to focus our market leasing activity on great Dallas-based restaurants and specialty food products. I mean, who doesn't have better restaurants than us? And so we really need to focus on trying to recruit some of those to the farmers market. And let's create another anchor destination for downtown. When you think about it, the northern side of downtown has been very successful in the last few years. Clyde Warren, the Arts District, the Perot Museum, a lot of good venues. We just talked about the Main Street portion of downtown. It's really becoming quite vibrant. The southwest portion of downtown has got the Omni, and soon we'll have additional improvements on Lamar and other places. So the south, it's time for the southeast portion of downtown to catch up and become a destination as well. So additional goals was to incorporate housing and recreational space and really pull the market into a residential community. Rather than having it at the side of downtown, kind of pull it into downtown and wrap it with a community. We wanted to eliminate the ongoing city financial support for the Dallas Farmers Market and actually receive revenue rather than give it revenue as time goes on. We needed to improve the infrastructure and streetscape amenities, build a quality of place, and develop a strong branding and marketing campaign. Now, before we actually established the goal, we went out on the street just to kind of test what was going on out there, and we did do an RFP, and we did get one proposal. But the original proposal, they did not want to buy the land, they didn't want to lease the land, and they wanted to be subsidized at the same amount that we're subsidizing the market now. And we didn't think that was going to advance the market enough, and so we rejected that offer, and we went back on the street again. Except the second time, we regrouped, and we got a whole bunch of stakeholders involved, and many of them are sitting right over there. We got some of the vendors involved. We got the adjacent property owners involved, the Farmers Market Stakeholders Group that you're very familiar with. We got some designers and landscape architects and representatives from the Farmers Market Friends to help us. We got the DPD involved, representatives from the Bridge, Downtown Dallas, City Design Studio, the Office of Economic Development. And they all got together and tried to figure out, okay, what are our problems that we need to address? And they put all that together and we sent in an RFP. We got two responses to the RFP, and the Farmers Market Group won through the competitive interview process. We started interviews in August, and we completed them, Friday of this last week. So just in time to get this briefing out, so trust me, this ink is wet. So basically, some of the people that are involved in the Farmers Market Group, and by the way, that's the working title of the group, are Brian Bergeson with Spectrum Properties, and he did a building on Main Street. It's a building that has Jason's in it and the CVS and a bank. We're very proud of that project. We have the Cobbs involved in this and Blair Black. And there are a lot of other talent that they've pulled upon to try to put together this proposal, and they'll be utilizing them in different ways as we move forward if the council wants to do that. They really wanted, in terms of their goals, they really wanted to bring the farm-to-table approach back to the Dallas Farmers Market. Their basic program elements, and I'll go through this in different levels, but they wanted to renovate Shed 1. They've got... Let me reorient you with the Farmers Market. Shed 1 is the shed right now that has the farmers in it. Behind that on the south is that administrative building that you're familiar with. Something you might not be familiar with, that there's actually a parking lot. You can go down underneath this street and you pop back up and there's a remote parking lot. Very few people know it's there and very few people use it. On the other side is Shed 4. It's the shed that I referred to earlier as empty. Shed 3 is primarily filled with the produce dealers. Shed 2 is where you have like Pecan Lodge and some of the restaurants. Over on this side is called the Taylor Street facility. It's not owned by the city. It's privately owned. And it has warehouses in it. There used to be a little Mexican restaurant here, and recently it became, I think it's like a Cajun restaurant, and I think that's gone under. And so that's basically the orientation of the farmers market as it exists right now. But it keeps getting away from me. Okay. So their plan is to renovate Shed 1, the one with the farmers in it, to increase and improve space available for local farmers, and I'll talk about that in a second, improve the enclosed shed, Shed 2, to showcase Dallas-based restaurants, that's the enclosed shed, build a new mixed-use development where Shed 3 and Shed 4 stand right now, and basically that would create a residential community around the farmers market. They wanted to create a community garden and futsal fields that I basically referred to earlier, and basically replace the unused or very rarely used remote parking area. They want to bring in a culinary nutritional training in the administration building. They really wanted to schedule regular events and entertainment and art, and a large quarterly event and several smaller events are required in the agreement that we've negotiated with them. We think it's very important, and the neighborhood thinks it's very important, that we have regular festivals at the farmers market that become traditions for us. And so the contract with them calls for one of these every quarter with some smaller things on the monthly basis. They want to improve branding and marketing, improve the public areas, create a pedestrian-friendly environment, and encourage street-level activity. That's what we want, too. And they want to more than double the amount of public parking. Has anybody ever had trouble parking at the farmer's market? It's not that there's so little of it. It's just you don't know where it is. And so the plan is to basically have a very organized parking plan and double the amount of parking spaces. So the improvement plan itself, and I'll start with the Taylor facility. The Spectrum Properties has bought this building, the private building, and they plan on tearing part of it down and turning it in, and rebuilding it and turning it into restaurants and a band shell and a rooftop deck, and they'll have a lot of entertainment there. Again, Shed 1, they would take out the parking that's inside Shed 1, the drive-through, if you will, and the angled parking, and they would double the number of vendor spaces from what's in there now. The administration building, they would turn into a culinary training and a production studio. The remote parking would get turned into the community garden and the little soccer fields. On the other side, Shed 2 would be restaurants and specialty retailers. Shed 3 and 4 would be mixed use, 240-plus apartments, the new parking garage, and ground floor retail. And there would be an additional 339 surface parking spaces around the farmer's market. Okay. So this is a rendering of Shed 1. Again, right now you can drive through this shed and do your angle parking. The plan calls for, rather than having two rows of parking, one on one side of the driveway and one on the other, you would have four. And so you actually have twice as many vendors as you have there today. And there would also be a place for the trucks to load and unload, so there wouldn't be any truck parking there anymore. So the trucks would unload their goods, and they would go park on the south side of Farmers Market, and then they would sell their goods without those trucks within the facility. And again, you would not be parking inside of it anymore. It would be completely pedestrian-oriented. Shed 2, and I don't have a rendering of this, but I have some pictures of what they intend to do, and they're on this slide. Small little vendor spaces, wines and cheese and specialty restaurants, that's how they plan on doing this. They've also talked about increasing the size of it by about 25% by adding a second floor. They would again focus on Dallas-centric restaurants, you know, pizzas and barbecues and fish and stuff that we have here locally. They would also put in a beer garden on the north side of Shed 2, and so to create a little bit more festive atmosphere. The Taylor facility. To orient you again, here's Shed 2, the enclosed shed. Here's Shed 1, which is would be the open-air farmer's market shed. This is the building that's privately owned, and they would tear part of this down again and reconstruct it into restaurants. And, of course, all the streets would be redone in the middle of this. And I'm about to get to this part over here. But let me give you a different angle of this building. Thank you.
this angle, you're at the farmer's market building itself, the open-air shed with the vendors, and you're looking across the street to the private building, and you can see how they have the restaurants here. They'll have a rooftop deck. They'll put in a little band shell here for entertainment. And you can start seeing how this area right here becomes the real focus area of the farmer's market for entertainment. And something Ms. Grayson was very interested in, you can have sidewalk cafes out here. You can have kiosks. And you can shut off the streets, and you can have these festivals I was talking about that you'd have to have once a quarter, and you can have your monthly things and that sort of area. You can see how this is starting being oriented as a real entertainment district. All right, then shed 3 and 4, right now, those are the sheds that have the produce dealers. One of them is full of produce dealers, and one of them is just empty. That's where they propose to put in the housing. It'd be like a 4-story residential, all-brick facade apartment complex with a parking garage that's separated into parking dedicated solely for shed 1, public parking for the area, and private parking for the apartment complex itself. And so that's the basically the residential component. It also has ground floor retail, and that retail would have in it very similar retail to the sheds. It would have restaurants, vending, specialty restaurants, and that sort of thing. And let me show you that rendering. And again, this would be all brick. We thought this was very important that it have a brick facade. We thought it would fit in much better with the new brick pavers and the new streets and the lighting that's designed to match all of this, and the facilities that remain, the open air shed as well as the shed that has the specialty restaurants and specialty vending in it. And so there's your residential component of this. You can see how that begins to wrap the entertainment portion. Now the auxiliary building, where the administration building is right now, that would be remodeled as well, and they would put in a culinary learning center. They would also take the chefs from the restaurants that are in Shed 2, and they would provide classes as well in the administration building to our folks. And right next to the administration building would be a community garden. And they would partner with the North Texas Food Bank as part of the community garden. There's funds to build the garden within this budget. And right next to the garden on the next page is the futsal fields. Now, I didn't know anything about this a few weeks ago, but apparently, again, it's getting wildly popular in the country. There is City Futsal is out of Carrollton. And they've recently, some of their kids have won some national championships, and they want to expand to Dallas so that Dallas kids can join this as well. And it's a lot like soccer. And we think it's really important for us to get kids here as well. And so this is a way to get the children into the market. Now, to do all of this, one, we're going to have to modify the existing TIF. Believe it or not, the farmer's market isn't in the farmer's market TIF. When the market was formed, because the farmers market was tax exempt, we didn't feel like it would contribute to the TIF, and so we didn't put it in there. And so what we need to do here is put it in the TIF and make the buildings taxable, so that their own taxes can be used to pay for the infrastructure and the gap financing for this project. And so that's the basic gist behind all of this. Also, if we make 20% of the units affordable, which is the city's policy, the county will join us, because that's the county's policy as well. And then they'll contribute as much as $4 million to the TIF, and so we can use their money and leverage our money to do all this. Also, we would decrease our participation from a 100% to 90%, so the general fund got to see a little bit of benefit from this, and we'd get about $2.6 million over the next 15 years. Again, we'd need to extend the TIF. This would generate about $19 million in TIF increment over the next 15 years. We would dedicate $15 million of it to this project and $4 million for those purple areas I told you about, those opportunity areas coming down the pike. Now, our schedule for the TIF amendment, we would ask you all, if you're supportive of this, to call a public hearing next Wednesday. The hearing wouldn't happen until the end of March after spring break. At that point, it would extend the term, amend the budget, approve some different budget categories. We would also, and so that's when that would occur, after spring break. Now, this project, there's several components to it. We're going to ask you all to approve a master agreement for this project next Wednesday, but that is just the first step on, we're guessing, 12, 15 different action items to do all this. There's going to be at least six TIF items themselves, and so each one of them will be reviewed by the appropriate committee and go to full council for approval. And the phases are basically, I've kind of gone through those. Now, to do all this, again, we have to make it taxable. So we would sell sheds 2 through 4, the administration building, and the remote parking area. That would generate about $3.23 million for the city. We would take much of that money, and we would do what's called defease the bonds. Basically, we have to pay off our debt. Because right now it's a public facility and it's about to be operated privately and for profit. And when you do that, Gene will tell you that we have to go ahead and pay off the debt, which we would do. And the debt on the farmer's market right now is about $2.3 million. So we have a little extra money after we pay off our debt, and we would use much of that money to pay to relocate this monster storm sewer line that goes right through this property. It's a 7-foot storm sewer line that goes underneath both buildings. Well, the developer can't build these 240 units on top of a 7-foot storm sewer line, so we have to move that. So between, after we get done defeasing, we need to move the storm sewer line. Now, we would maintain city control over this property, even though we're selling much of it. We're going to lease out Shed 1, which is the farmer's market shed. In the event that they cease operating it as a farmer's market, we cancel the lease and it reverts back to us. Because we think it's extremely important, no matter what happens here, that farmer's market continue operating. Because that's the anchor and that's the draw. And so we're not going to sell that. We'll lease that. In addition to that, all of these properties will have reverters, which basically means if they don't pull a building permit or they don't get their financing, there's trigger dates, and if they don't meet the trigger dates, they revert back to the city. So basically, that's a do-over. This never happened. We never had this briefing. If they don't get their financing or they don't pull their permits. So that's number one. The properties also have operational conditions. They have to operate in a certain way. They have to operate the way they've said they're going to operate. And they'll also have deed restrictions, which basically means you will do what you say. So they're quite protected. Also, there's about $6 million left in 2006 bond program dollars that we would use to do the streets. We got some criticism that we hadn't maintained these buildings, and the reason why we hadn't maintained them is because we wanted to go through this process. And so now we still have those dollars, and we can spend them on the streets in the neighborhood. Now, this is an expensive project. This is about $64 million in investment to redo all of this. And the developer is putting up an amazing amount of equity, on $26 million in equity cash that he's putting into this project. And we basically have 8% from our bond funds and a reimbursement of about $15 million. So this is probably, Carl's telling me, about twice what we normally do in terms of private equity into these projects. And the phases are on the bottom of page 55, and you can see how much each of these have cost by phase. On page 56, you can go across and see how they're all funded between the equity, the debt, reimbursements, the GO bonds, public-private partnership, and our surplus land sale. Now, in terms of timing, the very first thing that will happen is the purchase and lease of the properties. We hope to have that finished in March and actually transfer the properties in July. Next fall, the Shed 1, the farmer's shed, would start renovations, and it would be finished next spring. And then you start the next phase with Shed 2 and the other phases. This would be finished in about 2.5 years, so it's going to be a while. It would go quicker if we could do it all at once, but we have to move folks around as this happens. Now, the benefits to the city, This does implement the goals of the 360 plan. It implements the city's strategic plan. It focuses market leasing activity in great Dallas-based restaurants and specialty food products, creates another anchor for downtown. It incorporates housing and recreational space. It eliminates the city's financial support. It improves infrastructure and streetscape. It develops a strong branding and marketing campaign, and the mayor will appreciate this. They'll be using the Richards Group's spherical branding process. We had to look that up, too. Schedule, again, next Wednesday to call the public hearing for the TIF, approve the master plan, and then you can see how the rest of the schedule unfolds. That concludes my remarks. I'm open for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Mr. Cadane.
Ryan, that's a fantastic report. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just had a couple of questions. And you mentioned some of it there on Taylor Street. That street will be open to put kiosks and whatnot all the way down it, all the way to Harwood, or just from Pearl to
there's Central? They can put kiosks from Harwood all the way to
Chavez.
Chavez. Yeah.
So that whole street will be utilized for shops and goods.
Yeah, they can have sidewalk cafes, and I'm sure the kiosks would be temporary and based. Yeah. You know, you wouldn't have them all the time.
Yeah. Okay, then if we go into this deal, we know the plans and designs that the builder has. They will be maintained, and we will be either deed restricted or whatnot to what can or can't go in there. Is that correct?
That's correct, and there's one level of security I didn't even mention, and that is they're not going to get paid back for their TIF reimbursement, you know, unless they do what they say and build what they say.
Yeah. Okay. Now, are we, you know, in your first item, we're selling everything on those 12 acres?
We own, there's 12 acres as part of the farmer's market. We own about 8. So we would keep the streets, the plazas, the public parking, a level of parking in the parking garage.
Wait, that's the parking underneath the administrative building?
No.
So where is the public parking?
On the street.
The street.
You'd have the streets, the on-street parking, the on-street amenities. You'd have a level in the public parking garage would be ours, completely ours, and we would own Shed 1, the farmer's market.
We would own Shed 1?
Yes.
Would we maintain and operate it?
No. We would own it and lease it out, but they would maintain and operate it.
Okay. And one thing I'd really like to see happen, and I know you've tried to do that, is keep the stakeholders involved throughout this, and it'd be nice if they could be involved with the developer also, because I know there's people been down there forever.
We couldn't agree more, and we've had some interesting conversations, some real fruitful conversations, and we think there's a benefit for having everybody maintained.
I do too, and I've talked with several of them, and I think they're totally behind this project. So I think that's real good, and I think together they can bring a great situation. This is going to be a new meeting place in our city. I guarantee it's going to be one of the hot spots of the city of Dallas. And this has been a long time coming, and it's something we've needed for a long time. And I applaud you and the developers for what they're doing. It's just going to be a great event. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you. Mr. Cadane, they're a very creative bunch. Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Chef, and I'm glad you mentioned the stakeholders and make sure the stakeholders is going to be involved. You know, I talked to Ms. Reagan and also Ms. Griffin with the Restaurant Association, and they want to make sure they want to be at the table. But another thing, Ryan, that we're talking about stakeholders, you know, and you said this is maybe a 12-part project. You know, you probably come back 6 times or 12 times. And I want to make sure those stakeholders there. I kind of talk about Paul Quinn College. You know, they have a forum there. It's a true forum there. I wish Paul Quinn can be at that table, because those entrepreneur, a business, how to run, maybe they'd be able to rent in the shed. I wish the Restaurant Association get with all the chefs in the city of Dallas. We have more restaurant and more shopping in the city of Dallas, and so we got a restaurant here. They should be shopping and buying their produce at the farmers market. I know that many men and women watch all the food shows, and those are the big thing going is a food show. So we should be using farmer market as a marketing tool for the chef to be buying at the market. I don't know if you've been at Pike Place in Seattle. If you go there, I think it's on the same line as Pike Place. It's a visitor place. Over 10 million people go there every year. It's not just a farmer's market. It's attraction. It's amenity that will revitalize the city of Dallas, especially in the farmer's market area. One thing that when we did the convention center hotel, and we said, why do we build a hotel? Because we had a $1 billion convention center without a hotel connection. And you go to the convention center hotel, and you go to the convention center, and you drive underneath that to the dark rail line. It's kind of dark on there, right, Ryan?
Yes, sir.
And you said, what do the money come from? So we are taking $900,000 a year from the convention center hotels to subsidize the farmers market. And over 6 years, I add up about $3.7 million we could have had at the convention center hotel, which we need to improve it, but we subsidize the farmers market. Now, to do that, we are saying that we sell the land, now we take that money to reinvest into the farmers market. And that's what we're trying to do, to reinvest. And you look at the farmers market been established in 1940, so there had been no tax income come to the city. So we done lost over the last 6 years $3.7 million in the farmers market. That's a whole lot of money. On the 2006 bond package, we did have the bonds to do infrastructure of drainage. Have those bonds been sold yet, Ryan?
About two-thirds have been sold, about one-third yet.
So we do have some money in the bank for the bonds. Okay.
Yeah.
We talk about the bridge, and that's my main concern. We talk about safety, and I see that we have the police, the PALs, the storefront going to be there. I still urge that on this project, we need to speed up the bridge project a little quicker. I know it's going to take a year, but we need to speed that up. And we also make sure these stakeholders is going to be there. We talk about extending the TIF by 15 years. If you extend the TIF by 15 years, you save roughly about $19 million, Ryan?
Yes, sir.
$19 million, and you said $15 million go back into the farmer's market area?
Yes, to do this.
To do that, and another $4 million would go where?
Remember I showed you the map that had the purple color on it where we have opportunity areas near the farmer's market? That would be reserved for
Okay, so reserved, so opportunity area, there was the green, the purple, the green space, whatever.
Yeah.
What opportunity you see going there?
I think directly across Fever Chavez from farmer's market where you have those vacant, I call it vacant land, that would be an excellent opportunity to expand the housing. Also, frankly, right behind City Hall, I think in the future that would be a good spot for additional housing in those parking lots.
I guess last couple of questions. Number one, you know, we talk about the PID that we have with Phil Jones over there. That we're talking about tourism, that you look at Pike Place in Seattle, they said roughly about 10 million people come there. And since we're going to give this to a private developer, what role do the city of Dallas play? So we're still going to share two or share three. What role do we play to market it and make sure this product is branded correctly and stay branded correctly?
Well, I'll answer that at two levels. I mean, one, the tourism pit, I believe they hired Tracy Locke, or they're about to hire Tracy Locke. And so the farmer's market's already part of their marketing plan. This would just be more of that. But because it's the private sector, they'll be marketing themselves. And again, they want to do this spherical marketing campaign, and that, which basically means they'll have a campaign that no matter what angle you look at their campaign, it looks the same. It looks the same. It feels the same. They'll have a very aggressive branding and marketing campaign.
Okay. And last question to stakeholders again. And I know this is a very difficult question to ask and for you to answer. That my main concern is that when a private corporation take hold of something and they say we own it, then the community said, I want to be part of it. And they say you cannot be part of it because we own it. And that's my concern there. And still, this is part of the city that we still have ownership there. And my concern is make sure those stakeholders is still on those advisor board. Do we have advisor board? And if we do have advisor board, how is made up with the private, public, or stakeholders running? How is that going to be made up? I didn't see that there.
Well, number one, these folks will join the stakeholders. I mean, they'll be part of the party. And in addition to that, I would recommend the stakeholders being part of the TIF board. So that everybody's monitoring everybody and they move ahead together.
And I think it's a great project. I will be supporting, and I just wish we could do it on the fast track. I think downtown is doing great with 500 South Irving we passed yesterday, and we need the downtown to be connecting the east, you know, to the center of downtown. Ken, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you so much. Ron, I have a couple of questions. Who will be the private developer? Are they here?
They are here, and in fact, ma'am, I should probably introduce you. Brian, you want to stand up? Brian is basically on point with this. This is Brian Bergerson with Spectrum Properties. Again, we've had experience with Brian before, and we've had good partnerships.
Is his office here in Dallas?
Yes.
Okay. Has he done any other projects here in the city?
Yes.
Give me some examples.
The address is at 1401 Third Rail Lofts. Third Rail Lofts on Main Street. It's a 18-story building that has Jason's in it, and on the ground floor, and CVS. We've had good experience with
downtown.
It. Yes.
Okay. Did we go out to anybody else? Are they the only one who came to the table so they wanted to do the development?
No, there were two, and they went through a competitive process, mm-hmm. and the Farmers Market Group, which was the informal name of the proposer, they won.
Okay. The other thing, we talk about stakeholders, and the bridge is there. Have we talked to, and I know that we continue to talk about, we shifted some things around at the bridge and stuff where they can come in. Have we talked to the advisory members at the bridge and making sure the people who live there, the people who are there, the people who hang out there every day, have we talked to, kind of really looked at that to see how would that play a role in making sure that they perhaps can work there? Some of those people who are living at the bridge, have we done anything to ensure that they can be a part of working there, doing some day-to-day work there? Have we looked at anything like that?
I don't believe we have. I will say that a representative from the bridge was part of the original RFP drafting group, and he's been very much involved in that. And moving the entryway from one side to the other was kind of an outcropping of that, but we can do more.
Well, I really do think that because what I don't want to happen is if this is passed, Ms. Medrano and Mayor, and as we start this, then people come back down and complain about the eyesore of those people who live around the bridge. Then looking for a way to move the bridge, that's another thing. Let's move the bridge because it's hurting our outlook on this project. So somehow we need to really deal with what we see every day there. And if we put in place something that can manifest, that can help, I think it'll be a win-win situation for this development in the bridge, Ryan. I'm still not comfortable with
with just one person representing the voices of the bridge. The other thing is the community garden. What would be the purpose of the community garden? Is it to sell flowers, or is it to sell? What would be the purpose?
I think the purpose of the community garden, frankly, will probably evolve over time. Mm-hmm. But again, the North Texas Food Bank mm-hmm. will be involved in this, so we'll literally be feeding people.
And that's another thing. Can people come in from the bridge, perhaps, and participate in the community garden? Or will the community garden only be for those who live around the community? Can I go to the community garden? Will it be a cost to get into the community garden? I mean, is there a fee? I mean, these are things I think we need to think out as well. Shed 1. When you go back to the shed and look at Shed 1, the vendors, how many vendors do we have there now?
Well, the total number of vendors varies, of course, in the 70s probably.
About 70 vendors?
Yeah.
And I know we have, are we looking to make sure that, let me step back, what would be the cost? How much do the vendors pay now?
Ron? Okay, $25 a day.
Okay, so they pay $25 a day, and then they pay at the end of the month, about the week.
I think it's every day, yeah.
They pay every day?
Yeah. It's daily.
Okay, so with the new shed, Shed 1, will that stay in place, or since the city owns that, Ron, or will we be looking at something different once this development is?
No, it's my the pro forma. And, you know, these things can change, but I also call for $25 a day. The pro forma also calls for $25 a day for the vendors.
Based on this performing here already?
Yeah.
So that won't change?
I don't guess so, no.
You don't know yet?
That's what they're calling for right now. And remember, this will be, again, it'll be a privately operated shed, so they'll have to adjust their price point to always keep it full. So they can't charge too much, and they can't charge too little. They need to charge us by right.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to find out was Shed 1. We will own Shed 1, the city of Dallas,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Will the private developer have a say-so in the cost of Shed 1, or would this come from the city manager who would then present it to us on our budget?
No. Shed 1, even though it's going to be owned by us, uh-huh. and we're going to lease it out.
So you're listening out to the developer.
So they will operate it, mm-hmm. and they will first pour sizable amount of money into it to fix mm-hmm. it all up. They will operate it. They will lease it.
Okay. Once again, I'm going back to this. If the developer, we own it, we're going to lease it out to Shed 1.
Yes, ma'am.
We got about 70 vendors there now. They pay $25 a day. Looking at the performance of the cost of the number that you showed us here, I'm looking on page 56, and you got Shed 1 here. You got the total of Shed 1, and I guess it's going to be the total of building out Shed 1, the equity in Shed 1, the debt reserve in Shed 1, the TIF dollars in Shed 1. And I'm coming up with a cost is going to be more than $25 a day for those vendors.
Oh, Ms. Davis, these are the capital dollars. This is what they're going to invest on the front side.
I'm going back to capital dollars. And if they're putting this type of money into each line item, then of course somebody got to pay for the cost of Shed 1. Am I right?
Yes.
Who would pay for the cost of Shed 1?
The developers are paying for the cost of Shed 1. They're issuing some debt, and they're putting. They'll get reimbursed partially from the TIF.
And so what I'm asking, the vendors won't. The only thing the vendors will have to pay back is $25, and you're not quite sure on that. Is what you're saying?
The initial is they'll charge $25. Sorry. Oh yeah, yeah. Yes, yes, ma'am. But we anticipate it'll be $25 a day plus special events.
Okay, let's go back to special events. If it's 25, let Ken Carsley come up here, please. Carsley, come up, please. Let Ryan let Carl talk,
sure.
Please. If it's $25 a day, they're paying now. Then special events. I'm trying to figure out of those vendors, how much will they have to pay based on this source and uses that you put here on 56, page 56?
Well, we haven't seen the cash flow at this point, but I would add another caveat to that. There will be people, the developers also are leasing out commercial spaces in all the surrounding areas,
okay,
the Taylor Street spaces and everything. So they're going to be factoring into their rents something that will help to cover the deficits that you're alluding to keep Shed 1 functioning.
Okay. And so at this point, Ms. Thum, all I'm trying to figure out, because, see what I don't want to have happen, we got vendors there now. And some of this is their livelihood. We can't say that, right? Can we say some of this is their livelihood?
Yeah.
It's the only job that they have. If we have to be mindful that if we haven't talked to them, and this is probably all new to them, I want to make sure that those vendors in Shed 1, that they either need to know that it's going to be $25 a day, and perhaps for special events, do it go up on special events, Ryan? If it's a special event going on, so they're paying $25 a day, then do they have to pay an additional $25 for special events or $75 for special events?
Ms. Davis, the special events would be revenue to the developer above and beyond what the farmers pay.
Once again, I'm not asking that. See,
they wouldn't have to pay more for that, no, ma'am.
Okay. So whatever it'll be $25 for those vendors in Shed 1. Even though I'm looking at this performer here, and what they've broke down here for Shed 1, who owns Shed 2? Who owns Shed 2?
The developer owns Shed 2.
Okay, and what can he? And based on Shed 2, he can put a farmer's market in Shed 2.
The deed restrictions are for specialty restaurants, and restaurants.
Okay, but not a farmer's market.
That's correct.
So that will be a part of the deed restriction.
Yes.
Okay, so the only deed restriction, the only one that we have or have a look says so over perhaps is Shed 1. And looking at Shed 1, we're talking about $25 a day, special events, and this is on record now, special events, then they will still pay $25 a day?
The way it's organized right now is there will be certain days a week that the booths will be leased. In fact, it's a requirement that they must have a farmer's market in there at least 3 days per week. On those 3 days per week, that's a minimum. The way the pro forma is right now, it's $25 per farmer per day during those days. But they can have those 3 days per week, which is the minimum they have to be open. The rest of the time, they can do special events and bring in additional revenue.
Okay, let me ask you this, Ryan. I'm back to this. I can have clear understanding. Right now, the Shed 1 right now, the vendors are there what days? Monday through Sunday?
Is that right, Ron?
Yeah.
Monday through Sunday? Thursday through Sunday?
They go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They're there 4 days now. Once this development starts, then the 3 days will be what? Thursday, Friday, and Saturday?
I'm not sure that's been determined yet.
Okay. Now, of those 3 days they're there, then what happens to the other days? Then the developer can then lease their space out to someone else.
That's right.
Okay. So they can lease it out to someone else. And those other days, the developer can lease it out to someone else to sell the same thing that they're selling in Shed 1.
Generally, they'll probably be doing special events, you know, weddings, parties, that sort of thing. But they can do what they want. I mean, they have to have a minimum of 3 days per week operating as a farmer's market.
Okay. Okay, so at this point, the vendors, and this is, I'm back to the vendors. And if you break this down, and I'm just going to say this, Mr. Mayor, and it's just my own personal opinion. If the vendors are only there for 3 days and they're charging $25 a day, then how will the vendors make some money off this brand new development?
I guess I would argue this brand new development, they have a lot better chance of making money than they do with the way things are today.
I'm asking. We're talking. I'm asking. We have no marketing plan to show how they will make some money. So if that could be a part of the plan, to show me how will the vendors in Shed 1 make some additional dollars. And I do understand what you're saying. This is a brand new development. I would think it would be a lot more better than what they're getting now out of the deal. Yeah, that's common sense. At the end of the day, I would think that someone would be able to say, this is how the vendors, I would think, could make some money off of this new development. Now, once again, your smart person will also understand that these vendors are paying $25 a day, give or take. I know perhaps in the mindset, some might be saying that's not enough. It's cheap. But once again, I would want those vendors to recap what they've lost over the years. Have they lost money over the years, would you say?
I doubt it, no.
They've lost any money?
No, they wouldn't be going there if they were losing money.
Okay, even now?
Even now.
Okay. The administration building, looking at you talked about some things. Now, in the administration building, Ryan, it will consist of cooking trainings, education for cooking, community gardens and stuff like that?
The administration building, their intent right now is to put in a culinary school.
Okay.
And until such time they have the culinary school, they want to be able to have classes from chefs at the restaurants.
Okay. And it will also house the for staff as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Then my last one on page 56. Mr. Mayor, thank you, and I'll be finished. And looking at this, are we putting in any dollars into this?
Into this overall development?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, depending on how you look at it, the TIF dollars would be generated essentially by themselves and rebated to themselves.
Okay, so we have enough money to kick that off?
They would be paying that and then to get back from their own investment.
Okay.
There would be bond dollars that are left over from 2006 that we never spent or issued, and that would be used to fix the streets and the lights and stuff like that. And then right now we have a few hundred thousand dollars built in public-private to help move that big storm sewer thing I was telling you about earlier.
And this time out of economic development?
Yes, ma'am.
How much? So I want
$670,000.
$670,000. And that's from, and so of that money is strictly kind of used for that. We don't have any other project, anything.
No, that's what it'd be dedicated for.
Dedicated for. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To say I'm excited about this would be an understatement. Ryan, thank you for your leadership on this. You know, sometimes they talk about super groups when they talk about rock bands. And I think as we talk about the group that is working on this farmers market project, we're talking about a super group of developers and other city leaders who I think we know just about everybody in the front two rows here, and we know their projects. So I am incredibly enthusiastic about this. You and I have been talking about farmers market, I think, since I got here, and that was 8 years ago. We have seen downtown grow and change in those last 8 years, but we haven't, as you point out, seen that same growth and that same new life and vitality really come to the farmers market area. It hasn't made it over there. And we're seeing in downtown such a renaissance with Clyde Warren Park, the Arts District, Main Street growth, the new streetcar line connecting into Oak Cliff. All of those things are going to bring dramatic change. One of the things I want to make sure we think about here is making connections between these nodes. I think that's important. And I think Ms. Davis brought up some very important questions about vendors. One of the things we have to remember is that this is going to create a successful situation for everyone, because right now the farmers market is not the destination that we want it to be. And We're going to see, I believe this will be remarkably successful, and when it is successful, we're going to see this become a destination. We're going to see those vendors enjoy and reap this great success because there will be so many more people coming to the farmers market, not just in Dallas, but from the surrounding region, because I think it can be what we all imagine when we think of a great farmers market. Linda and I got to go to Seattle. When was that, Linda? 4 years ago? Yeah, and we got to see their incredible market, and I think that's that type of vitality in life, and where you have this great community atmosphere, is really what we're going to work to create here. Remind us of the timeline, and not I'm not talking technical stuff. I mean just implementation of the plan.
The purchase and lease would authorize after spring break sometime. They would take possession in July. During the summer, they'd be working on their plans, their actual physical design of their buildings. In the fall, when it gets to be close to wintertime, when you've kind of closed down the market for the fall, they would start construction of Shed 1, and they would want it open in time for spring and the farm production in the springtime. So they would also probably be doing some of the streetscaping outside of Shed 1 during that period of time, and then they start Shed 2. And then the last phase is the apartments and the retail underneath the apartments.
I love that this will help us create a farmer's market that is really, truly about farmers and quality produce. There are certainly some vendors there that meet that standard, but not enough of them do, and our market really isn't known for that. I would love for people to come from all across DFW to our farmers market and know it, because if they want fresh produce, that's the place to go. That's the place to visit. I couldn't be more excited about it. I'm thrilled with all of these wonderful faces I see over here. I have every confidence that this will be a success. So, Ryan, again, kudos to you for your leadership on this. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hunt. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. When Ms. Hunt was talking about rock groups, I thought she was going to say you were a rock star, Ryan, for pulling all this together. But he knows already that he's a rock star. Okay. I've got to tell you, I'm more excited about this than any of the previous proposals I've ever seen for this area. I think this one has a real chance for success. I do have a couple of questions, though. I'm looking at that rendering on top over there, and I see on the far left the structured parking, I believe. Is that an accurate representation of how that's going to look?
Oh, I totally doubt it.
Oh, okay.
It is a rendering. The brick facade we're insisting on, because frankly I fell in love with the way the brick looked.
That's on the residential building.
Yeah. We will work through the design studio, and then again, when this kind of falls into what I was talking about, we have to come back multiple times. This will come to go through the design studio, and then it'll come back to the appropriate committee, and then y'all to look at it.
Because I was just wondering if you were going to do that kind of obvious parking structure, or whether there had been any thought given to doing the kind that's in West Village, where the buildings are wrapped around the parking structure, even though the public can park in there as well as the residents, and you hide it, and it just looks so much more attractive.
I will tell you, the building that we've worked with Brian on before, it again is that third rail loss on Main Street. And if you go by there, and there's a bank next to what used to be called the Gulf State Building, it still is, and then there's a Jason's Deli, and then there's a CVS. I may have those backwards. Right above it is a parking garage, right above that retail, and you'd never know it. And then above that is the apartments. And so I believe that through the design studio and through the development and through y'all, we can figure out a way to mask the garage so you can't really see it.
And make it look kind of inconspicuous the way it does on Main Street?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's very, like, in your face right there.
Okay.
I would hope we wouldn't do that. On page 54, is there any time frame for where if the development doesn't move forward, and we think about having it revert back to the city, which we hope we're not going to have to do, is there a time limit for how long this
this is out there before that might happen, which we hope it won't.
Yeah, there are times built into the master agreement, so yes.
Okay, so certain things have to be accomplished by certain dates.
Right.
And we're not just going to keep extending it forever?
No. I mean, it has been built in. The Economic Development Director has the opportunity to extend it a certain period of time.
What so is that? How much?
I think it's 10, is it 10 months, 6 months?
1 year.
Okay. A full year? Okay.
Four years?
No, one.
Oh.
One.
Okay.
But, and so that's because of the complexity of this and how many phases there are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get in a situation where we're having to, you know, do a 3-month extension and a 2-month extension. So we've given some flexibility to the Economic Development Director. But no, each one of them has key dates, and if you miss it.
But each one gets a certain amount of extension.
Yeah.
But not overall years and years and years.
No. No.
Okay. On page 71, tell me a little bit about this chart, Ryan. And now the state allows us to do a 25%. There's a 25% cap on TIF.
Yes.
For the city's tax base. Where are we now? 10%? If we do this in the city center extension, is it a total of 10%?
Okay. Well, we'll come see. I'll let you say this.
Ms. Grayson, the 8.24% already incorporates this deal as if it was
done.
Deal? Yes.
And the city center extension.
Yes, ma'am.
TIF extension.
Yes, it is.
Oh, and we're just at 8.24?
That's correct.
With both of these? Okay.
Yep.
That's better than I thought. Okay. I wasn't sure what those numbers meant in there, but that's good. Okay. Thank you. Again, congratulations, Ryan.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And Ryan, thank you for all the hard work that you've been putting together working with this farmers market. I want to go on record to say that it's probably a tie, but I will yield a little bit to Ms. Madrona, but I'm at the farmers market every Sunday. And Ms. Madrona is there beyond Sundays because you're down there. But I shop and I get my greens from there. And when I get my greens, I get 20 bunches of greens and I fix them myself personally. And I make sure that I do not go to the grocery store for these greens because my greens are so fabulous. That when I well they are fabulous. I was going to suggest that with the lunch that we're having here that one day we the council do a potluck and we just bring I'm serious and we all bring something one particular Wednesday. You don't cook. Oh Lord Jesus. Let me first say this. I have some concerns and I have a lot of excitement. I have excitement because, one, I too have been an advocate on farmers market for many years, making sure that folks understand because I simply love going down and shopping and picking up the produce and the fruit and looking at all the different people that are there. And then it's just an outing for me on the days that I choose to go, and I pretty much go on Sunday mornings, so folks know on the Sunday mornings. I want to say to Angus Nguyen, and I see you there, Angus, when it comes, and I think this is a heck of a team, because as related to the design, when you have Good, Fulton, and Farrell, and Ms. Good, you're there, and you're teamed up with Angus from the entertainment aspect of it, and then our developer and the rest of the group that are there. This is going to be fantastic, and I want us to kind of take advantage of this opportunity. The reason I say that, one, is because so much development has taken place on the north side of downtown Woodall Rogers, and I'm completely excited and ecstatic about all the great things that have taken place. When you go back and see where American Airlines is now, and you look at how that begun to kick off the development of Victory and other things, and then the hunts on Woodall Rogers and the arts groups and everything that we've done over there, now Clyde Warren Park, it is just a total different downtown. for on that side. We've been screaming about, okay, now we got the raggedy side over here, and what project would it be that's going to kick off the ball for the development on the south side of downtown? That's one reason why I embrace this project so, because one thing, this is something that is so humongous, and it is such a long-term opportunity. If all of the pieces of this puzzle can fit together, then we're on the beginning verge of the redevelopment of this side of downtown, in which that would bring it all the way back up to the Ramada Hotels, the old hotel here. It'll just spill all over here into the Cedars. But I do not want to stop it and not go across the bridge, across I-35. It is so very important that we continue to have this excitement on the other side of I-35. Which one is that, Ryan? That's 30. So on the other side of 30 as well, and which goes into Fair Park in South Dallas. I want to just kind of set the tone to say that this is the beginning, is the major reason that I really embrace it. Yes, it is needed, because I'm there and have been there when the pigeons would have the pigeon droppings on you, and I tried to fight to say, let's put a net under there so we wouldn't have the pigeons there. So I know in this new development, you all are going to have things that will keep pigeons away. And we love pigeons, but we don't love them around our greens and fruit and vegetables. But at the same token, with changes, you have to have sacrifices. I would only caution and say that, and I'm looking at it from a reality standpoint, when we look at the farmers and you look at the vendors, right now, if we go here today and we look, if today was busy, Farmers Market Day, in shed, would that be one? Ryan, I'm speaking up in the back. Shed one, I believe. The original shed one.
Yeah.
Where the farmers are. It's just not a lot of farmers. It's not a lot of farmers. But in shed two, is it shed two? Shed four?
Shed three.
Yeah. You had it filled with the vendors. One thing I'd like to do is create a relationship with farmers and vendors somehow, so that we can make sure that we have a full shed of opportunity there with farmers and vendors. Maybe with some type of special signage that identifies the farmer and that maybe identifies the vendor. The thing of it is, you got 60 locations, and the deal will not work if we have 60 locations and 15 or 20 farmers. We need to have all 60 of those locations filled. And that's something that you all have to deal with. We won't be dealing with. I'm just suggesting that we make sure that we create that relationship. And I have no doubt that the housing around there, this is a good deal futuristically, because you're bringing people to the market when you bring the apartments there and the housing there. These are automatic people that could just run downstairs and do what they need to do. I'm a little concerned about how we're going to drive in, because I come in off of Harwood. And I know that you all will have all that ironed out to get the regular route as to how to come in and would turn in, because I'm understanding that the apartments are going to take over shed 3 and 4.
Yes, except the parking garage will be off Harwood.
Okay, wherever it is. I know you're going to have it, because you got good foot and fair, so they don't mess up. They built Peacrest Golf Course, let me be real clear about that, in my district. So I have no doubt, but these are just some concerns I wanted to raise. And I want to also say that on behalf of people that have been there, relationships are everything. And we have people that have been there for years, and we have people whose livelihoods depend on that. And I would hope that the relationship between the new owners and the vendors and the people that are currently there, is that courtesy is extended for them to be ingratiated into this project. There's a lot of excitement. I would also want to say
that I know the Richards Group and I believe Tracy Lott and those folks are into some of the branding and marketing. The branding and marketing must go into the southern portion of the city as well, because if you go there this Sunday, you're going to see all types of folks. You're going to see a lot of black folks. You're going to see a lot of white folks. You're going to see a lot of Hispanics, Asians, and everybody there. So if we're going to make it successful, then we're going to have to do the things correctly for it to be successful. And that means we have to partner up with the entire community and invite those folks in. I'm excited about this, but I have some reserved concerns. But I do know, knowing the group that you all are, that at the end of the day, it's going to be great. The bridge with the other side of changing the entry point to the opposite side, I think, and the young lady in the back will attest to it. I came to that meeting and told them, hey, listen, we're having a problem with it on Harwood. Just open up the other side. At one point, they said they couldn't, but now we're going to do that. I think that's also going to be an enhancement for us as relate to the concerns we have. Mayor, Mary, Ryan, I'm ecstatic about this opportunity and the growth that it is going to begin to provide for the southern side of downtown. I just don't want it limited and people, you know, taken out of this process. Everybody giving a I mean, we've been having a heck of a good time. Angus Wynn is a hell of a promoter. I want y'all to know that. I mean, this man, he knows the entertainment industry. I learned it from him. So I know that we're going to have festivals and we're going to have some heck of a great times down there. So the special events, all those things, it's going to be great. And it's an opportunity that this city, Mayor, through your leadership, and Mary, let me say, I know this has been something you've been trying to make sure that it's done and done right. I'm ecstatic. This is a great day. But now, just be inclusionary, have the right people involved, be open to the folks that have been there, that's made their livings, and let's just go put all the rest of these cities to shame. Let's go and invite them to our farmers market and let them come down and enjoy the great things that we have to offer them in this new development. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Caraway. Ms. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. And as the council, I think all of us are excited about this. Ryan, I have a question on slide number 27, the Youth Activity Center with the in conjunction with PAL. Talk to me about the center. Where will the youth come from? How will they get to and from this location?
Probably the focal point of this center will be a boxing ring inside the building there, and through some of our other partnerships, we're beginning to be able to have some folks that have donated some money or going to buy us some dart vans to be able to transport youth. We want to be able to reach out to the youth that are in that area as that area grows, and as the population goes up, we want to be able to reach out and be able to bring them in that way. Again, the boxing will be a key component. This will be our headquarters for the lieutenant and the sergeants that run our youth programs, whether they be the POW program, the Explore programs. Ultimately, what we're hoping to do with the Blue in the schools, this will be their headquarters as well.
So this will be more after school and weekends?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
There'll be a lot of after school.
Thank you. Ryan, in shed number 2, I am sure that there will be a non-competitive agreement. The folks that have invested time and energy in shit to have a wonderful business. I know that Mr. Caraway, you know, goes on Sunday morning. Well, I may start somewhere else, but you know, I enjoy going and visiting my friends at the Popular Tamale House there at shed number 2, and then go and stroll and get my vegetables. But they've been working really hard, and all of them have worked really hard. We want to keep them there, and as they, you know, renovate and everything, how do we keep them to continue to make money and not lose money and not lose their customers? How do we do that?
Well, first, that is a particular restaurant they're extremely excited about and certainly want to keep. We believe that
they're going to make significantly more money than they make now under the proposal that's before you. Now, as with any renovation, there will be inconvenience, though. And for a certain period of time, they'll probably either have to phase the construction of Shed 2 or they'll have to move everybody out and everybody back in. And what we've been talking about is potentially using Shed 4 to put the restaurants in food trucks for a certain period of time, and perhaps warming up food over at the administration building. They're working their way through that right now, but we're trying to make it the least inconvenient as possible.
Okay. And I'm sure that we will include folks and encourage folks, you know, on our hike and bike trails that are, in particular, Santa Fe, to, you know, do some type of promotion. And I know that Ms. Hunt and Ms. Hassel and I talked about incorporating the hike and bike trails to maybe converge on City Hall and then all go to Farmers Market and do our thing there, and with maybe chefs and everything. So I'm hoping that we include those folks as well. I definitely want to thank the Friends of Farmers Market and our stakeholders. And I know they're here. If you will stand up, some folks that are here have never gave up. So thank you for your persistence. They never gave up and constantly calling, emailing, and visiting. So thank you very much. Angus, we believe in you and all that you have done in and around the Dallas area. So thank you very much. And I know we just came back from the Nasher and they unveiled their Nasher Exchange. I know that they're going to do it for for a while. I'm hoping that maybe we have some type of, I know that music is art, but I'm hoping that we have some type of sculpture or art component as well at the farmers market. But with this, I definitely would love to support it. I'm hoping that, I know that the stakeholders had sent a list of questions, and I'm reviewing the answers, and I'm hoping that all the answers are to their satisfaction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Slide 61. The short comment. Without question, this will be just a fluid working process. Will not happen overnight. That's why you're going to do the various steps that are involved. But right up there at the top, it says, and I think the key word, the opportunity, and which is to establish an urban neighborhood for all income levels. And then a little further down the last paragraph, it goes on to talk about what you were summing up, the historic structures that are around, the low-cost vacant land, so on and so forth. But what we have is really almost just like a piece of clay that's going to be so cool to watch y'all do what you're going to do. Very seldom do we see this large number of folks come down that have probably different views about things, but at the same time you have one view, which goes back to an urban neighborhood. And y'all have got this really neat piece of clay, and it's going to be cool, isn't it? So, hats off to you, Ryan, for your hard work, to the city, to all the stakeholders that have stayed firm on this for all this time. Y'all have been very vocal, and looky here, see where you are today on this, because I believe it in the bottom of my heart, when it comes to urban, truly urban neighborhoods, what a great area and a great concept. So, but it'll take all y'all to do it. So thank y'all so very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Ms. Hassel.
Thank you, Mayor. Just real quick, I just want to thank y'all again. I think having been born and raised here my entire life, I think looking at what your plans are for the farmers market are certainly things that are going to help the city. They're going to help the southern end of the city. And it looks a lot like Bishop Arts in my district, which has been very successful for the past 4 years. So, but I do believe that we have plenty to share, and you're welcome to come and see how successful Bishop Arts is anytime. and we continue to make that a better area, certainly with the streetcar coming in. But I think you guys have a great vision. I hope we don't hurt the current vendors that are there now that have stuck it out for a long time, including La Popular Tamale House, and including the farmers vendors, because I've been going there since I was a little girl. So again, congratulations. Thank you for your money, and thank you for your investment in into the farmers market. We've got a great opportunity there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hassel. Ms. Margolin.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you so much, Ryan, for your leadership. This is so incredibly exciting. I used to bring my kids there every Sunday afternoon when they were in a stroller. And, yeah, because you could put the stuff in the stroller and walk around. It really worked. and they were all excited, and, you know, it was something to keep them busy for about an hour, hour and a half. Couple questions. So Mr. Adkins alluded to us subsidizing the farmers market now to the tune of about $900,000 a year. Is that about right?
That's probably the worst it's been. It has been running in the 400 to 600 range. But he's also right that if you add up the last 6 years, it's that 3.9 or whatever million.
And that comes out of the convention center?
The farmers market is part of the convention center organizationally.
Okay, so this won't be money back into the general fund. It'll be money back to the convention center.
It will save the convention center money in years that we've had bad years.
Right.
And but the taxes that will be generated will go to the general fund.
Okay. The cost for reorienting the entrance to the bridge, is that part of this project, or is that coming out of another pocket?
That is a different pocket, and those are federal and bond funds. Is that right, Jerry? That's right. We didn't spend all the money from the GO bonds to construct the bridge, and so this is the rest of it.
And so approximately what's going to be the cost of doing this? Do you know?
$600,000. So $1.2 million.
Okay. Thank you. How did we come up with $15 million in TIF grant? How was that? Where did that number come from?
Basically, it is the increment that will be generated off this project over 15 years, pumped back into this project. Yeah. If you and we've looked at the rate of return, and this one is probably marginal, somewhere in the middle with the $15 million.
Okay. Usually that's shown as part of a presentation like this, and I didn't see it this time.
And it will be each time you see one of the TIF briefings that will be coming back. You'll get to see some of them are better and some are worse. As you can imagine, the food stall and the community garden, not so much. Okay. Mm-hmm. The apartment building, hopefully they'll have a greater rate of return there, and it'll all kind of average out. We'll show that to you when we do the TIF briefings.
Mm-hmm.
But without the TIF increment, they'd be a negative return.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. I just saw the email from the stakeholders group with the long list of questions, and I know that Tanya is scheduled to speak at the end of our meeting, but would it be okay with you if I ask them a couple of questions now?
I think Mr. Cadane wanted to do the same thing, right?
Oh, okay.
That's who I'd like to come up is Ms. Reagan, Ms. Tanya Reagan,
and maybe Mr. Ingram.
Give us a little insight to what they are doing and what's going on and their perspective on this development. And I have talked with them several times, and I believe they're all behind it. Come up, Ms. Reagan. Ms. Reagan looks a little bit too young to have been down there too long, but she is a stakeholder. She's got a business down there. She's seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we just want to, or I do, and I'm sure the council does, get a little bit of your insight and perspective of this development and what your thoughts are. And you are a part of the Farmers Market Association.
Yes.
Yes.
Wait, hold on. His first time. What's that? No. I think it's my prerogative. Ms. Grayson, did you have some questions you want to ask?
Well, actually, this was just exactly what I had wanted to do.
Great.
Was get, and I thought maybe Jim Ingendorf too. But I had wanted to get their input, not after we're done talking about it, but now.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Tanya Reagan. I'm president of the Farmers Market Stakeholders Association. And the email that you're referring to, the last several days, last couple days in particular, there have been a lot of questions going back and forth just to try to firm up some of the specifics on the plan. And as far as our outtake on it, we are extremely supportive of the plan and under no circumstances want to hold the plan up and want to see it move forward. As you all know, we have been working on a plan since about 2010, and in early 2011, you know, we sat down with Ryan Evans and Ms. Hunt and several other of the council members that are sitting here today and started talking about the distress and the neglect and the abuse and the current situation of the market. And the reality is, for the market to exist as it does today, it would close. And there have been some wonderful questions today by all of you, but the reality is, without a group like Spectrum Properties and the people who are sitting here in these first two rows, the market would not survive in its current state. And when we sat down back in early 2011, you know, Ms. Hunt said to our group, "I don't want to hear any more words. I want to hear solutions and I want to hear a plan. Come back to us when you have a plan." And our group organized and we came up with some solutions and we forwarded that plan to Mr. Ryan Evans. And the components of that plan included the privatization, it included police presence, a substation, it included finding solutions with the situation with the bridge, which I know you all are very familiar with, and part of that was moving that entrance. All of that is part of this presentation that you see today. And, you know, Mr. Ryan Evans has been absolutely fantastic and has done a really, really wonderful job and has really stepped forward and done everything that he said he was going to do to help us implement that plan. So I really want to commend him. Also with Carl Stundens, you know, the RFP committee that was put together by Ryan Evans with Mr. Stundens leading that. You know, again, it was stakeholders, myself, Craig Melby, Mike Rubel. We all served on that committee and we spent several months designing that from scratch to get to the point where you see today. And again, Carl Stundens really, really drove that. So again, there's a lot of questions going around. I think specifically the three items of the most concern for our group today were, one, that the plan is going to stay as it currently exists, that we aren't going to get 6 months, a year, 18 months down the road and all of a sudden be looking at something different, that what we see today and what we're looking at is what will carry forward. Two, the security aspect, that there will continue to be and be ongoing security that works with the entire neighborhood and with the entire district in keeping that market safe so people will be feel safe to come down and patron it. And three, which several of you have already mentioned, is the stakeholder input. You know, we are a very organized group. We feel very, very strongly in our community, and we feel that we have been you know, sort of the spearhead to get it to this point, and we really want to know that we will continue to have a seat at the table with our group so that this beautiful development, when it's absolutely wonderful and successful, will be able to benefit all of the south side of downtown and all of the district. So we support the project.
Thank you very much. Sir, you have a couple of minutes.
My name is Jim Ingendorf. In response to you about the questions that were asked, Ryan and Carl both did an outstanding job of replying in less than 24 hours to all of our inquiries to a very satisfactory mark.
Good.
So, as Tanya has said, we're strongly behind this project.
Did they respond to that question about hard money? You had a question in here about how much hard money is really being provided.
No, I sent that one in kind of late, too.
I sent that one in kind of late.
I put everything in a short form to y'all, and that was the only question out of all of them that I sent way
late
in the game.
This was a short form?
Pretty long. Do you want that question answered?
I would like to have it answered.
On page 56, and this goes back to the equity question, they are putting in, can't see if I got my glasses, $26 million in cash. That's pretty hard money. And I'll also say that the contract itself, I believe, has $41 million as a minimum. Is that right? $40 million as a minimum investment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Mayor, I just had one more quick question.
Please.
For Ryan. And it was something that Carolyn had talked about. You said that the vendors could contract for 3 days to be there. The farmers could contract for 3 days.
No, the contract says that the Shed 1 has to be open as a farmer's market at least 3 days per week.
What if a farmer wanted to do more than 3 days?
Well, I really think that's going to be depending on the management of that shed as to how many days they want to keep it open as a farmer's market.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to ensure that this indeed is a farmer's market. I mean, I know there's going to be a lot of other stuff going on, but, you know, people are going to come down there for a lot of reasons, but
yes.
One of the big ones is it's a farmer's market.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So that'll be something that we'll hear about later as it's worked through with management and things like that.
Yeah, and again, we had to put in a minimum condition in the contract. I would hope for more.
Okay, the minimum is 3 days.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Cadane, do you want to say anything else? Okay. Anybody else? Let me ask. We're not voting on this today. It's just a briefing. It's just moving forward. Would you go to slide 30? Can we go to slide 30?
We must be looking at a different page.
Okay, farmers market area initiatives. For some reason it said 30 in mine, but it's right before this, the slide before this. There we go. Okay. First of all, thank you for the briefing. Thank you for your hard work, Ryan. I think this is a very important slide for the city of Dallas. I mean, you articulated all the things that have been going on, but as Mr. Caraway pointed out, not a lot has been happening on the south side. And to look at this and see the vision, not only in farmers market, but all this is extremely heartening to me, because we're not going to grow southern Dallas until we grow the south side of downtown. It will open up to the Cedars. It will open up to the Fair Park area. And it will, I think, start to cascade there. So this is a very, if someone wants to say, what's a key beachhead for us, it's right here. And to see those activities, the green space, the development, and then in particular, this project. I agree with the folks that have complimented the leadership team on this group, first class, and I'm impressed with the commitment financially and also civically to this project. Many of you have talked to me over the years, and I'm so excited we're getting to this point. Right now it's a plan. We got to turn it into reality, and this is where the hard lifting comes and the details, but I think it is important. I do think it's important for us as a city council to know this is a public-private partnership. And when you say the word private, you do give up some control in this. So making sure we're clear about what's important and what's not. But I believe this is going to work because we've got first-class individuals that know how to balance these things, and this is the right way to go. It has not worked as a public entity, and I think it will work as a private and a public partnership in this. Getting specifically down to the farmers market, I'm a big believer, and it's a huge trend in America, for locally sourced and locally grown materials. This is our opportunity, so I'm speaking to anybody out there that makes great cheeses or makes grows great local vegetables, that's what we want in here. We want locally grown and produced things. And so as we're building this up and doing it, those sources and those distribution systems need to be created, because it needs to be differentiated in that. Local beers. I mean, we've got a lot of local breweries happening now, and that can be a big part of this as well. So I'm excited about that. Lastly, I echo a few other folks that have said moving the entrance to the bridge to the other side is what we need to do. This is an urban environment, and we want to take care of all of our citizens, but I think that's a smarter way to do it, and I think we will be money well spent on making that happen. Ryan, I know you didn't do this alone, but you did a lot of the heavy lifting, so I want to say personally thank you, and to the city manager who I know has been working diligently on this. Everybody, I think you've got unanimity on our part that we're excited about this. Again, we're all in it together, but you guys are going to have to keep pushing us and having that sense of urgency, because we want to make this a reality as soon as we can.
Mayor, if I could take a point of personal privilege, I would like to thank four people, and that's our new Convention Center Director, Ron King, Carl Zavakowski, Carl Stundens, who I'm made nuts in the last couple of weeks, and Sarah Haseeb with the attorney's office. Yes, we're going to thank the attorneys. She did fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you, Ryan. All right. We will finish the day with our afternoon speakers. Ms. Rios. You're welcome to stay for afternoon.
We're going to begin your afternoon speakers with Richard Sheridan, followed by Azumba Lunks, Gwen Wooten, LaCoya London, and Frank Ward. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council, or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council.
Who's our first speaker?
Your first speaker is Richard Sheridan.
All right. All right, guys. Miss Grayson, Sheridan. Mr. Cadane.
Mr. Sheridan.
Let's move it all outside.
Mr. Sheridan, we will begin the timer.
Hold on. Let's give Mr. Sheridan our respect. Guys, Angus, move it outside. Okay, I think we're under control now, Ms. Sheridan. Please.
Yes, my name is Rich Sheridan. Live at 3022 Forest Lane, Dallas, Texas. This is a call for a battered women's and children's shelter, but also a call to change the clientele at the bridge. This booklet contains some of the history of the bridge, the political aspect of the bridge, the condemnation of the bridge by the Heart of Dallas group, saying it would be throwing money down a toilet bowl, that kind of thing. Has the city of Dallas finally woken up to our battered homeless families and mostly one-parent mothers and with children homeless? The problem certainly isn't new. 2 or 3 years ago, it was published in the Dallas Morning News that Dallas County had about 4,000 homeless children alone. Is this another City Hall flash in the pan Katrina event where the new homeless category gets some political news attention, election vote attention, and then it dies quickly away as our memories fade? This is my 10th year appearing before the City Council or the County. I first appeared before Judge Mark Kelleher on April 8, 2003. I was drawn into local politics because of what I saw as the crimes against our homeless, criminalizing the homeless. Most who are homeless unintentionally or by mistake. I thought to myself, isn't it bad enough that they have lost everything? And then we make them criminals and send them to jail. That was 10 years ago. Our homeless problem is much worse today with our near-the-cliff economy. The reality then, as it is now, if there are enough beds, shelter beds, then the homeless will be around. Many will stink, and many will be pushy panhandlers. Some will go to the bathroom in the street, and some will scare people, all of which is not good for tourist business, all of which is not good for farmers market. Dallas today is about 4,000 beds short in sheltering the homeless. I played a major role in getting the bridge built, and it has not turned out the way it should have. The farmers market shareholders have been here for many years. The bridge is a mean-spirited place run by an incompetent, Nazi-like staff, primarily interested in maintaining a grease pit where residents, clients are kept as a number, as a statistic, with the bridge getting U.S. government money from their numbers game. And the bridge showing the unknowing Dallas citizens that the city is doing a good job, which is the furthest thing from the truth. Every month there's a vicious cycle of client government checks coming in. Clients go on to get their coke, crack, cocaine, etc. Then they go on their drug bingings for a few days. Many times again, the farmers market shareholders have come before the city council complaining about the blight on farmers market by the bridge clientele. You'll get a copy of this. Basically, the clientele is a cancer on that part of Dallas. I'm a homeless advocate. I'm not a homophobe. This is insanity. You change the clientele of the bridge, just like rich people. Where do they go? They take out of that environment, the bad element environment, rehabilitation. The bridge isn't going to work. It's going to blight that project. I pray to God somebody sees the sense in this, and let's stop it now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Sheridan.
Your next speaker is Ozumba Lunks. Not present. Gwen Wooten. Not present. LaCoya London. Ms. London will be followed by Frank Ward.
Hello, LaCoya London, 1753 Mockingbird. Okay, I'm looking at this farmer's market plan. I really hope they don't send them, when y'all do get some organized, I hope they don't make them, the vendors that's there, throw them out, you know, kick them out to the curb. Because I saw Dwayne Carraway mentioning that, but that's one thing that needs to not happen. If they do get this plan that they want to do. So I'm here about the, I want to talk about the state of Texas versus the children, because it has really become real serious. We have children being locked up and on probation while trying to graduate from high school. How ridiculous can that be? I mean, it's very serious when you have a child that's trying to get a diploma, you know, and got a monitor on their feet, or has to go see their probation officer or something like that. Okay, and some of these kids do something one time and then they're punished for the rest of their life. So I'm just trying to figure out the school, the pipeline, the prison. It's very serious, and that's what's happening. I mean, you have children doing, some are doing wrong things, but I mean, you got to rehabilitate them too, you know. It's not hard to rehabilitate a child. And I have a problem with y'all taking y'all recreation centers away from the children. You know, y'all renting them out. And we had an incident last night in the Arlington Park area, right last night. They had some games scheduled for some little children. But they also had soccer practice also at the same time. So my point is, how are you going to rent out the gym to two different people? Because we already know whoever paid the most, you know, they're going to get the gym. But the point is, you had a lot of disappointed kids last night that couldn't understand how their game was canceled. We had some people driving from a whole nother recreation center over there. And then the coordinator was there, and the first thing she says is, oh, we made a mistake. That's a big mistake. And then you didn't even try to resolve it. The gym could have closed later or something. At least you would have served both parties, you know, but you had indoor soccer inside of a gymnasium where the basketball goes. The kids didn't even understand it. They were like, "Why? We can't go outside, but can they go outside?" So I want to know why y'all have coordinators that don't know how to even plan things. They don't even, that's bad planning right there, because you had a game scheduled and then you had this soccer practice. It's ridiculous, and shame on her. Shame on her for having that gym rented out to two different people, because you disappointed a lot of 5-year-olds through 15-year-olds. That's sad. I want you to know what y'all doing in the city of Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your final speaker is Frank Ward, and he is not present. That concludes your speakers.
Meeting is adjourned at 3:21 p.m. Thank you.